Mark. Can y'all hear me? You can. You can hear me with the thing playing, right? Okay. See, I was able to listen to the thing play before, and I could take the mic, and y'all could hear both. But it doesn't seem to want to work that way now, since I told it to go ahead and install the new updates. Okay, so that's another little thing that got screwed up on this particular update. You heard both, but I didn't. Okay? When I told it to take the mic, it shut off the audio for me. So, let's see. Let's get rid of that. We don't need that up there anymore. And sorry about being late, folks. But this thing wanted to, it insisted that I update. And that took a couple of tries. So, all right. So, shalom, y'all. Here's Mark. We're here. I can't. This is just terrible. Let's see. I want to move. There. No, that's changing the size of the thing. Every time I try to move the. There it goes. There we go. That's more like it. That's what I'm looking for. I don't know why this thing is messing up like this today. And we put this in the tray. There we go. Pal Talk decided to change things, and they've messed up the way things handle on my screen. So, anyway, we're here today to study Yehovah's Word. Okay? Praise Yehovah, we're here to study His Word. scriptures we're going to be looking at today are Bamidbar, or Numbers, chapter 28 and 29. Then we're going to look at Yehezkel, that is Ezekiel chapter 45, verses 13 to 25. Tehillim, or Psalm 115. And then Ivrit, or Hebrews, chapter 10. So that's what we're going to be looking at today. Pay close attention to Hebrews chapter 10, because it's the whole point of all of the nine chapters that came before. Okay? In that particular thing, Paul, or whichever of his Talmudim that wrote the book, wrote it. He gave you the first nine chapters to build up to the point in chapter 10. And then he winds down with other things in 11 through 13. So, but chapter 10 is the central point of the whole thing. And you really have to understand the first nine chapters and what they're talking about, which is almost entirely about the Levitical priesthood and how it's not as good as the Melchizedek priesthood. And then chapter 10 goes into minute detail, pretty much, about the Melchizedek priesthood. So that's what today's Read How to Shop portion is about. So pay careful attention, because it's really very, very cool passage of Scripture. Okay, so we have a number of prayer requests today. I just learned now in the text that Daryl was laid off or lost his job somehow. He was hurt a few weeks ago, and I think that probably had something to do with it. Rip was also laid off. He had a seasonal job at Lowe's. They called it a seasonal job. And he was hoping that the season would last into August, and it didn't. So they laid him off like this past Wednesday or Thursday was when I got the news. So that's not a good thing. We're going to be praying for them. Also, there is a Facebook page that Diana has been posting in Seekers of Torah. It's posted at the top. It's linked to the top of the page. It's called Praying for Isaac. Isaac is a little boy. He's probably 2 or 3 years old, and he has cancer in his. I'm not even sure where the cancer is, but they went and they operated and they got out 99% of the tumor, from what I'm told. And now he's having complications that are related to that. So we're asking for prayer for Isaac as well. Those of you who have a Facebook page, a Facebook entity, if you will, if you can get there, go over to Praying for Isaac. It's a community page. Go there and like it, if you will, and that will update you on everything that's happening with Isaac. So that'll be a good thing. You can get there from Diana's Seekers of Torah page. It's linked right to the top of the thing. You can't miss it. So if you go to Seekers for Torah or Seekers in Torah, you can do that. And there's your Love Our Isaac. Okay? You can actually just click there. It'll go right directly to it. There are a bunch of pages like that about little kids who are having medical issues, and that ought not to be, but that's how it is in our fallen world. But there are a bunch of them. Isaac was one that just really gripped at Diana's heart, and if you go through the thing, you'll understand why it grips your heart. It just does. So keep Isaac in prayer as well. Let's see. Anything else? Off the top of my head, no. So we'll go ahead and we're going to start like we do every week with the Shema. The Shema is the central truth of Scripture. If you don't understand that Yehovah, the creator of the universe, is one, that he is the only intrinsic reality, all other reality, while it is real, doesn't exist unless he speaks it into existence. Not only did he speak it into existence in the past, but he continues to speak it into existence. That's like creation is continuing, okay, by the word of his mouth. So it's something that was accomplished, but it's something that is continually updated, okay, even better and more so than Facebook, or I'm sorry, Paltalk. So he updates it every moment, okay, and so it's very cool. He keeps, if he stops speaking about something, that thing stops existing. So if you look out and you can see all the stuff that you're familiar with, it's because Yehovah keeps speaking it just for you, okay, and he keeps speaking you into existence as well, just for him. So bless Yehovah on that. Let's see. Well, we start with the Shema, and I haven't done that yet. The Shema goes like this. It goes, Shema Yisrael, Yehovah Eloheinu, Yehovah Echad, Baruch Shem Kavod, Malchuto Leolam Vayed. Hear, O Israel, Yehovah our Elohim, Yehovah is one. Blessed be he whose glorious kingdom is forever and ever. Amen, amen. Father, thank you for bringing us together here today so that we can study your word. We ask that you would put your spirit on everyone who comes into this room. Put your spirit on everyone who comes into this room, even the ones that come in to troll and to give us a hard time. Put your spirit on them so that they'll understand what they're doing, those trolls who come in to give us trouble. That's so they'll understand what they're doing, and your spirit can rebuke them for us. We don't need the rebuke to rebuke them. Let your spirit do that, Father. We bless you for the answer to that prayer. I know it's going to happen. They come in specifically to shatter our peace, our Shabbat Shalom. So now put your spirit on each and every one of us so that your Shalom stays with us even through the trolls. Bless you, Father, for that as well. Don't let us get involved in stupid arguments over stuff. Have my admins see the trouble coming and abort it. And I bless you for that, Father. I picked that word purposely. You put it in my mind purposely, because that's what we need to do with them, is just get them out of the way. And we can do that by red dotting, bouncing, and banning. And if people come in to do that, that's what we want, Father. Bring it to our minds. Show it to us immediately. Now, Father, we have these specific prayer requests. Rip was laid off this week, Father. We're asking that you would provide him with steady, real employment, not a seasonal job, that he find a real job. Same thing with Daryl, our brother Daryl. Father, these guys need a little bit of stability and peace in their lives. And I ask, Father, that you would provide it. There are other people here that are looking for work as well, Father. The economy is not good, and it's because of that our government and our people have turned their backs on you, and you're trying to get their attention so that they will make teshuvah and come back to your ways. Father, we ask that you would do that and make us an example of what can happen if they turn towards you. Make us want to do what you want us to do. Lead us to do it. And thereby we could be an example to them of what can happen if you turn to the ways of Yehovah. Bless you for the answer to that one as well, Father. Rip is looking for work. Daryl is looking for work. There are a number of other people in this room right now who are looking for work, Father. All of you folks, put it in the text so that everyone can see that you're looking for work, so that they can all pray for you. It is very important that we pray for each other, that we keep lifting each other up. The only reason I'm here is because you all did that for me 5.5 years ago. Okay? So that's the only reason I'm alive to talk to you. It's because of the prayers of the saints. We can all overcome if we are all praying for each other. Bless you for that, Father. Now, for Isaac and all of the others, there are hundreds of them, Father, on Facebook. But Isaac is the one that is before our eyes. We thank you, Father, that the doctors were able to get the vast, vast majority of that tumor out, that it did not impinge on his kidneys, that it was leaning up against his bladder and kidneys and was causing him some distress. But once the tumor was gone, that distress is gone. But there are other issues, Father. We'd ask that you would guide those physicians to see exactly what the problems are and give them the proper way to alleviate those problems. And we bless you for the answer to that, Father. In Yeshua's name, we know you're going to do it because we're all praying for it. We know it's going to happen. Bless you, Father. Now, in each room that's present here today, in each room where there's a computer, in each home where there's a computer, there are other spirits that don't work directly for you. They work for Hasatan. And we know that everything that happens, happens because you allow it for a particular reason. And even the bad things that happen to us, Father, like getting laid off and having sick children, these are done for our good. Everything that we, even the things that we don't like, are done for our good. You work them together for our good. Bless you, Father, for that. Now, you have all those spirits in all those rooms. I ask, Father, that you would blind their eyes, that you would deafen their ears, that you would make them unable to feel or to perceive anything about your truth that goes out here today, so that they can't take that truth in some future date, twist it in our minds so that we get off the direct way to you. We want to keep our eyes on you and keep moving towards you. And if we get our eyes off of that, then we're going to start getting off the direct path. We don't want that. We want to get to you as quickly and as safely as possible. And you can do that through us. And we're asking that you would just keep those guys from being able to twist what we know to be true, even just a little bit, and get us off. Also quicken our own minds so that we'll recognize when we start to get off that path. And make teshuvah and come back to the direct path, moving directly towards you. That's keep our eyes on you. You are the goal. You are the purpose for our existence. Bless you, Father, for the answer to those prayers. In Yeshua's name, amen and amen. We're going to be moving on now to the Torah portion. Torah portion is in Bamidbar. Oh, I don't have a Bible program up yet. Hang on a second. Let me put that away and get the Bible program up. Enter Numbers 28. Got Numbers 1. Let's try Numbers 28. Doesn't like that. There we go. Okay. Numbers 28. Reading from the King James. As always, when I come upon Hebrew names, I try to pronounce them in the Hebrew fashion. And that includes the name of Yehovah, which is translated in the thing as the Lord, capital O, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D. And I switch that to Yehovah, which is the closest thing as I can find to the actual pronunciation. Although other people think otherwise. It's okay, we're allowed to disagree. Anyway, chapter 28, verse 1. Yehovah spake unto Moshe, saying, Command the people of Israel, and say to them, My offering, my food, for my food offerings, my pleasing aroma, you shall be careful to offer to me at its appointed time. And you shall say to them, This is the food offering that... This is not... Oh, look at there. It changed my... Let's try this. Aha! And Yehovah spake unto Moshe, saying, Command the children of Israel, and say unto them, My offering and my bread for my sacrifices made by fire, a sweet savor unto me, shall ye observe to offer unto me in their due season. And thou shalt say unto them, This is the offering made by fire, which ye shall offer unto Yehovah, two lambs of the first year, without spot, day by day, for a continual burnt offering. The one lamb shalt thou offer in the morning, and the other lamb shalt thou offer at even. That's an interesting way of putting that, isn't it? It's one offering, but it's in two parts. So, and we'll address that in a little bit. And a tenth part of an ephah of flour for a meat offering, mingled with the fourth part of an hin of beaten oil. It is a continual burnt offering, which was ordained in Mount Sinai for a sweet savor, a sacrifice made by fire unto Yehovah. And the drink offerings thereof, the fourth of an hin for the one lamb, in the holy shalt thou cause the strong wine to be poured unto Yehovah, a drink offering. And the other lamb shalt thou offer at even as a meat offering, as the meat offering of the morning, and as the drink offering thereof, thou shalt offer a sacrifice made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yehovah. And on the Sabbath day, two lambs of the first year without spot, and two tenth deals of flour, a meat offering, mingled with oil, and a drink offering thereof, the burnt offering of every Shabbat, beside the continual burnt offering and his drink offering. And in the beginnings of your months, you shall offer a burnt offering unto Yehovah, two young bullocks and one ram, seven lambs of the first year without spot, and three tenth deals of flour, a meat offering mingled with oil for one bullock, and two tenth deals of flour, a meat offering mingled with oil for one ram. And a several tenth deal of flour mingled with oil, a meat offering unto one lamb, a burnt offering of a sweet savor, a sacrifice made by fire unto Yehovah, and their drink offerings shall be half an hin of wine unto a bullock, and a third of an hin unto a ram, and a fourth of an hin unto the lamb. This is the burnt offering of every month throughout the months of the year. And one kid of the goats for a sin offering unto Jehovah shall be offered before the continual burnt offering and his drink offering, and in the 14th day of the first month is the Passover of Jehovah. And in the 15th day of this month, the feast, 7 days shall unleavened bread be eaten. And in the first day, and holy convocation, ye shall do no manner of servile work, but ye shall offer a sacrifice made by fire, a burnt offering unto Jehovah, 2 young bullocks and 1 ram and 7 lambs of the first year. They shall be unto you without blemish. And their meat offering, flour mingled with oil. 3 tenth deals shall ye offer for a bullock, and 2 tenth deals for a ram. A several tenth deal shalt thou offer for every lamb throughout the 7 lambs. And 1 goat, a sin offering, to make an atonement for you. You shall offer these beside the burnt offering in the morning, which is for a continual burnt offering. After this manner you shall offer daily throughout the 7 days the meat of the sacrifice made by fire of a sweet savor unto Jehovah. It shall be offered beside the continual burnt offering and his drink offering. And on the 7th day you shall have an holy convocation. You shall do no servile work. Also, in the day of first fruits, when you bring a new meat offering unto Jehovah, after your weeks be out, after your weeks, you shall have an holy convocation. You shall do no servile work. But you shall offer the burnt offering for a sweet savor unto Jehovah, 2 young bullocks, 1 ram, 7 lambs of the first year, and their meat offering of flour mingled with oil, 3 tenth deals unto 1 bullock, 2 tenth deals unto 1 ram, and several tenth deals unto 1 lamb throughout the 7 lambs. 1 kid of the goats to make an atonement for you, you shall offer beside the continual burnt offering and his meat offering. They shall be unto you without blemish, and their drink offerings. Notice it says, they shall be unto you without blemish. That's because there's no such thing as something that's completely without blemish. Jehovah can see the blemish in everything, but you aren't able to perceive it, and therefore, that's a good thing for you to offer. You're doing your very best. Okay, Bamidbar 28. This whole passage is about the additional offerings to be made on the Shabbat, the new moons, and the feasts. These are additional offerings that the priests were to offer in the Mishkan and the future temple. These are not personal offerings like the family's Pesach lambs. These are the national offerings. If the priest had to make all these offerings for each family in Israel, or even just for the citizens of Jerusalem, they would be there for months to try to slaughter that many animals. And the flocks and herds would be severely depleted in a season, much less in a year. Now, think about the need for 7 million or more yearling lambs each Pesach, assuming 1 million families making Aliyah for the feast. No way this is done for every family in Yerushalayim for the Feast of Unleavened Bread, Shavuot, and or Sukkot. Since these were the national offerings for special days, in addition to the daily offerings are mentioned first, followed by the special offerings. The daily offerings were offered in morning and afternoon, about 9 a.m. and 3 p.m., give or take. It seems that the evening and morning offerings are 2 halves of 1 daily offering, as they are a continual burnt or elevation offering. In Daniel chapter 8, verse 14, it is written, "And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed." The word translated days there are actually Erev Boker, the root words. Stone's Tanakh has it translated like this, and he said to me, until nightfall, morning, 2,300, and then the Holy One will be rectified. That's from Tanakh, Stone's edition from Art Scroll. It doesn't say evenings, mornings, plural, or even evenings and mornings, which to my mind would make it unequivocal to mean 2,300 days. It says 2,300 evening, morning. It may be saying 2,300 total offerings. 1,150 morning, 1,150 evening equals 2,300 offerings. I lean rather heavily to 2,300 of each, 2,300 combinations of evening and morning offerings, seems the most natural, but it is not unequivocal to my mind. This is the only use of these terms together, the one immediately following the other, and is translated days in the King James. The difference could have the start of this timing, 38.33 months different in that prophecy, showing that it's not wise to base how you live your life on your interpretation of prophecy. In this case, one or both interpretations could be correct. Now, I believe, this is a parenthetical, by the way, I believe that we are living in the last days. And I have believed this for 35 years, based largely on Hal Lindsey's, among other evangelicals, books. And it has affected my life decisions. I am not prepared to retire, as my parents were. As I get nearer to that age, and it's only a few years ahead, I realize the foolishness of that decision. I will always have to earn a living, somehow. We need to live our lives in holiness, as if the last day is today, while preparing as if the world could go on for another 200 years in its present or worse state. That is the definition of prudent in this light. Proverbs 14:15. The simple believeth every word, but the prudent man looketh well to his doing. Proverbs 22, verse 3, and 27, verse 12, both say the same thing. A prudent man foreseeth the evil, and hideth himself, prepares, in other words. But the simple pass on and are punished. And then Isaiah chapter 5, and verse 21, says, Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes, and prudent in their own sight. Young men out there, listen up carefully. Believing that Yehovah Yeshua will return to rule and reign soon should make us live Torah in His righteousness. It should not make us think that preparations for our old age are unnecessary, or that we should not continue to live as if what we don't do to preserve this generation will have no effect. The world is reaping largely what we elders have sown. I think the dispensational half-truths that have been popular for the last 100 to 150 years in Christianity and the Laodicean spirit in the Kahal of Mashiach has adversely affected our influence and been at least a secondary cause of the economic, political, and spiritual debauchery we see in America and the world. They have aided in the spiritual descent of mankind into the abyss. And we all must bear at least some partial responsibility, myself probably more than anyone listening, since I have a bit more influence due to my position as leader of this little group. Yaakov is absolutely correct when he says in James chapter 3, verses 1 and 2a, My brethren, be not many masters, don't be many rabbis. Rabbi means my master. Okay. Be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation, for in many things we offend all. That's the end of my parenthetical. Now, the daily offerings in the evenings and mornings are continual, no let up. I can only assume that even during the wilderness adventure, these offerings were made every day. Did this affect their progress from camp to camp? Perhaps this is why they only had 42 recorded camps. Of course, those may have been the places they stayed for an extended period of time, and they may have stopped to make these offerings and overnight while journeying from one semi-permanent camp to the next. If that were the case, we would only be able to travel for 4 to 5 hours at a time. The time they would travel between the Boker and the Ma'ariv offerings. If they were marching like the army marches, that would make for a 16 to 20 mile daily move, assuming that the manna and water from the rock, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 4, gave them all the necessary nutrition and ability to march at a march pace, 30 inch steps, 2 steps per second, or about 4 miles per hour, for 4 to 5 hours per day. That's not unreasonable. Moshe was 120 when he croaked, and neither his body nor his spirit were abated. He was in the same shape he had been in his 30s throughout his life. Now, he may have turned gray, but he was still in excellent physical condition. Verse 7 says, the tamid, or daily offerings, were made in the Kodesh. But this was not the Kodesh within the Mishkan proper. This speaks of a place set apart for the offerings, the brazen altar. There is an interesting comment in Schottenstein's Chumash on Exodus chapter 29, which I'm going to read to you here as soon as I get out the Chumash. Here he is. Chapter 29, verses 38 to 46. Where are we? Getting there. 38 to 46, okay. And here's the comment. The Tamid offering. Let's see, where am I? Yes. Pages 220 and 221, that's correct. This passage, the offering outlined in this passage was brought every day of the year and was totally unrelated to the inauguration ritual. The Torah mentions it here to tell us that it was offered even before the tabernacle assumed its full sanctity. Now remember, this is in Exodus chapter 29. This is part of the covenant. Okay? The Torah mentions it here to tell us that it was offered even before the tabernacle assumed its full sanctity. Ibn Ezra and Chizkuni note that the Tamid, like the other offerings of the inauguration week, was offered by Moshe, and the Kohanim assumed their responsibility for it on the first of Nisan. The offering of the morning Tamid was a festive event in the temple. Citing the Mishnah and Chronicles, Rav Bachya records the process. As the service proceeded, the Levites, accompanied by music, sang the song of the day, which is recited at the end of our daily morning service. And when the service was over, everyone bowed, even the king, if he was present. Ha'amek Devar notes that this passage ends by emphasizing that the tent of meeting will be the place where Elohim will meet with Moshe and the nation, and that it will be the place where Elohim will rest his presence upon Israel. In the Torah's other passage about the Tamid, in Numbers 28, 1 through 8, there is no mention of the tent. On the other hand, that passage describes the offering of in other words, Elohim's food, a reference that does not appear here. Based on these differences, Ha'amek Devar comments that the Tamid offering in the wilderness had the unique function of cementing the closeness between God and Israel, while the Tamid offerings in Eretz Israel, my food, were to bring prosperity to the nation, since food is a metaphor for wealth. The suggestion is that if Israel dedicates his own wealth to Elohim's service, he will reward it with even greater riches. And he says something very similar in Malachi chapter 3, if you'll remember. Okay, that's the end of that passage. That passage from Chumash speaks of our attitude in giving, not necessarily the amount we bring. Get that? Our attitude in giving, not necessarily the amount that we bring. Beginning in verse 9, we see the special Musaf offerings, beginning with that for Shabbat. Two spotless lambs. The priests did not rest from their daily labors on Shabbat, nor on any of the other holy convocations. In fact, they had more to do on all those days. So, there were daily sacrifices, Erev Boker, and there were weekly offerings, Shabbat B'Shabbato. The Shabbat special offerings was two male yearling lambs. The word B'Shabbato, in its own Shabbat, indicates that the Shabbat offerings could not be postponed until any other day or even to the next Shabbat. If they were not offered on the day they were supposed to be offered, the opportunity to offer that Shabbat's offerings was missed. There were also monthly offerings on Rosh Chodesh, in verse 11 and following, in addition to the daily and the Shabbat offerings, if the Rosh Chodesh happened on a Shabbat. Two young bullocks, if the Rosh Chodesh happened on a Shabbat, You got the daily offerings, the Shabbat offerings, and the Rosh Chodesh offerings all at one, on one day. That offering, the Rosh Chodesh offering, is two young bullocks, one ram, seven lambs of the first year without spot. That's a lot of extra work to be done on Rosh Chodesh. There is still more on Yom Teruah, okay, on the new moon of the seventh month. It certainly looks as though the priesthood had its extra duty every month on the first day of the month. So, even though there was only one Rosh Chodesh, which was commanded to be a Mikra Kodesh, they all had special offerings. David makes reference to this sacrifice in 1 Samuel chapter 20. The meal and libation offerings are the same as they always are for each animal offered as a sweet savor unto Yehovah. The very same offerings were offered on Rosh Chodesh are also offered every day of the week of unleavened bread, except that beginning with unleavened bread, there is also to be a he-goat of the first year offered as a sin offering. This leads me to infer that there is a difference between the Rosh Chodesh and the Moedim, as all the spring Moedim have a yearling male goat for a sin offering. We'll see in a few minutes if there is a difference between the average Rosh Chodesh and Yom Teruah, Rosh Chodesh of the seventh month. There isn't any difference in offerings between the Mikra Kodesh of the first and seventh days of the five and the 5 days in between them. These special offerings will be in addition to the daily and Shabbat offerings on a weekly Shabbat. The whole of the 7 days, therefore, are a part of the Moed. But only the first and last days are Mikra Kodesh. These are days of no servile work, by which I take the meaning of our occupation for making a living. Only one of these days is designated as a day of no work whatever, and we'll get into that in its course. In verse 26 and following, speaks of the Shavuot specifically. All the other offerings are made on Shavuot as on all the other Moedim up to now. It says, after your weeks, from which I infer that it is the only day of first fruits that has an additional special offering. The first fruits of barley does not. The first fruits of wheat does. I infer from this that barley first fruits is not a Moad, though it has significance in that it's the first day of the first week of the Omer count to Shavuot, as well as the day of Yeshua's resurrection, as the first fruits from among the dead. The ends of the special offerings for the spring Moedim and Mikra Kodesh all consist of two young bullocks, one ram, seven yearling lambs, and a goat for a sin offering. Goat for a sin offering is really interesting, because that's what was offered on Yom Kippur as well, was a young goat of the first year. This is an interesting thing that we get to see this during all of the Moedim in spring. And I think we'll see here. It's not in my mind right now, but I don't think that we're going to see that on Yom Teruah, nor during Sukkot. I could be wrong about that. Never mind. I didn't say that. I'm open to questions and comments on chapter 28 of Numbers. Are there any questions or comments? If you have a question or a comment, please raise your hand. I'll be happy to give you the mic. O ye Jews, welcome to the room. I've never seen you in here before. Good to see you. And is there anybody else here that I've never seen before? Nope, everybody else is a regular. So, questions or comments? Raise your hand. I'll be happy to give you the mic. Truth and Ken, you got your hand up. You may take the mic. Oh, wait a minute. Need to move this a little bit. Arr, I hate that. Okay. All yours.
Okay. Can I get a mic check? Thanks. Shabbat shalom, everyone. This is such This is an awesome portion. And I know I probably went down this path before, but I want to do it again to make sure that we remember the meanings here. Verse 2 is such an important verse to get into the Hebrew. Why do I say that? Well, let's start with, you see in the midst of this verse, Yah commands Moshe to say unto them, my offering, okay? My offering is the word korban, okay? Korban has a root of korab, which you see later in this same verse at the end, where it says, shall ye observe to offer unto me in the Moedim, or in the Moed, to offer. That word is karab. Okay, so karab, to offer, is the root of what's seen upon. Now, this word is so significant, and we read this in English, and we just get this, I think, ugly meaning of all this work, having to do all this work, bring this karab and korban, okay? Important to Yah, because it is the word that describes the relationship between us and Him, okay? I guess that's probably the clearest way to say this, okay? The word korab and korban literally mean to draw near, to approach, to bring near, to bring and present. Remember that Shaul or Paul tried so hard, and probably failed in our ugly translations, to show us what this word really means, and that we are to be that living sacrifice, okay? That we are a living sacrifice, and that our Messiah was a living sacrifice, a sweet savor unto Yah. It says in verse 2, Bamidbar 28 verse 2, this is all sacrifices are a sweet savor unto me, okay? Unto His nostrils. It's what pleases Him. Because, why? Because it's how we communicate with Him. It's how we draw near. Okay? We have to be cleansed, but yeah, this is how we draw near unto Him. It's so important, okay, that we do this. This is how we draw near unto Him. Let's please open your ears right now, okay? This is so important that we understand this. And this whole chapter is about when this happens, when you draw near. What does He start with? He starts with day by day in verse 3, right? Day by day, continual. The word continual is the word tamid, okay? Tamid, you can render this as continual, regular, some even say daily, but it's perpetual, it's forever. It's perpetual, and it's something you do consistently. So this burnt offering in verse 3, which is called a Ola offering, this is what we are to Him. We are a whole burnt offering unto our Creator. We are an Ola offering. We must give all of ourselves, our whole body, our whole soul. We should be that acceptable offering unto Him. That's what Shaul tried so hard to preach, and that his words got so twisted, I hate to say it, okay? But this is what He expects of us. This is how we draw near unto Him, right? We are to be a living sacrifice. We are to be offered. This is how we draw near unto Him. Okay? So, you see that day by day, there is a continual burnt offering. Now notice that, because you will then notice everything that is listed, every moed that is listed in this chapter and the next chapter. Okay? Every moed goes along with this daily morning sacrifice, along with the morning sacrifice, when the sun is rising, the light is growing. Oh, I love that. That concept is awesome. But think about this. When his light is growing, when the light is growing, okay? Not only do we offer that daily sacrifice, which we are, okay? Not only do we love him in a daily way, but we make it that much more special, is that we also do whatever else he commands us in these two chapters, these moed, these special moments of his. They are his, okay? And like Leviticus 23 verse 2 specifies this as well. You see it in Bamidbar 28:2. It says, you offer me in their due season, in the Moed. These are my offerings, it says in verse 2. These are his. Same with Vayikra or Leviticus 23 verse 2. These are my Moedim. Okay? They are his. So he's pronouncing them. He's making them special. And thus we should make them special. So what you will notice in all of these that we are looking at, okay, is that when there is additional karab or korbans involved, offerings, remember, that's how we draw near, when there is additional ones to the daily, when does it happen? It happens at the morning sacrifice, along with. And that's what I really like. You see that word, along with, okay? That's what happens in the morning, along with the morning sacrifice. You will do this other sacrifice, whether it be the first day of unleavened bread, whether it be the seventh day of unleavened bread, whether it be Feast of First Fruits, which is the wheat harvest, whether it be Yom Teruah, the blowing of trumpets, whether it be Yom Kippurim, whether it be every day of Sukkot, whether it be the last great day, all these days, all these offerings, when they go along with, next to, along with the morning sacrifice. That's so important. Look at that and see it. See it, because it is connected. It is truly connected. We give him as the sun is rising at 9 a.m., right? 9 a.m., the third hour of the day. That's the morning sacrifice. As the sun is growing, the light is growing in us, around us. The light is growing, and we begin to draw near unto him. That's what it's all about, folks. Woo! You know, think about that and digest it. Put it in your heart. This is so important to him and to us, how we connect to him, how we draw near, we karab unto him, okay? We are that sacrifice, so we are to draw near unto him. It's so important. You know, I know Christianity doesn't get any of this, it's a shame, but this is so important. And you know, one thing I noticed, Mark was mentioned the first fruits of the barley harvest. You don't see that here, do you, in Bamidbar 28:29? Why do you think that is? Well, there's one specific to that particular event, and we see it back in Micah 23. It says, as you go into the land, then you will do this. When you're brought into the kingdom, then you will do this particular Moed of his. Okay, we're not in that land yet. Okay? Our Messiah is. He's in the kingdom. He's doing it. Yep. He's doing it every year. He's doing it for us as our high priest. We are to remember it, certainly. But can we do it? No, we're not in the land. We haven't been brought in. But we will be. And so, I think that's why we don't see it here in the Midbar 28 and 29. I think the Midbar 28 and 29 are all about what they weren't doing. What was not important as long as they were amidst their sinful parents, you know, that had to die off. You know, it's really a picture of where we are today and where we've been for a long time. We're in that wilderness, you know. We're not, there's no tabernacle before us to do these things, but we remember it, and we try to do it the best we can. I think that's what happened this 40 years of wandering. I don't think they were doing it. I don't think they were doing any of these moeds, this moedim. I really don't. I think the first inkling of this fact is in the beginning of the book of Yehoshua or Joshua, when they come in, you know, and they crossed the water, they're baptized in the river Jordan, and the water is separated just like the Red Sea was. But it said that they had not been circumcised, and that this was a new Pesach. Now, I really think that they weren't keeping these days then. But now, they're about to go into the land here, okay? Think about where they're at this moment in the Midbar 28. They're about to go in the land. All those who were to be killed off were killed off. Those that Yah promised would die in the wilderness had died in the waters. Now they're about to go into the land. Now he wants to lay it down for them. This is how we will be one, my children. He's laying it out right here. Excuse me. This is it. This is how they will be one with him. And this is what we have to focus on. This is what we need to read and heed. Because that day is coming and it's drawing near, you know? But anyway, so one thing we see is this word, holy convocation, for one thing. We see it whenever there is a holy convocation mentioned, okay? We also see there's no work to be done. These two facts go hand in hand, okay? All throughout the year, you will see this. Okay, I know. I think Mark wasn't sure. You will see this throughout. Okay, these two chapters, and you will see if you look back in Micah 23. Whenever there is a what's called a holy convocation, there is no work to be done. Okay, And it's funny, you won't see the end of the spring week. You won't see this in either the Midbar here, 28 and 29, and you won't see it in Micah 23 regarding the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But you will see this in the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 16, verse 8. That last day is likened unto the eighth day of Sukkot. It is a solemn assembly. And that is such an important word, I'm not going to get into it now, until I'm going to wait till the next chapter, because we don't see it in this chapter. But I just want you to note that, okay? Get ready for that one, okay? Because it's so important that we see these things, that, okay? Remember, this is how we draw near unto him. Okay? This is how we draw near, and it's so important that we draw near properly, and we draw near at the right time, the best we can, you know? And that you will note that at every holy convocation, as the words are put, okay? Every holy convocation, there is a sin offering. Okay? There is a sin offering. Yes, you will see this. which is a goat. And of course, it's a male goat. It's a kid. I think this has to do with Messiah as well. Hallelujah. Because he fulfilled so much for us. This is all about him. Just, you know, always remember that too. This is all about him and what he did for us. And this is all about our connection between us and the Father. Messiah is he's there. He's the man. He's the connection. He is all about making it happen. He does it for us because he loves us that much. Maybe he wants us to be one with the Father. And you know that was the prayer, the big prayer that he prayed. That is our example. Right? That is the one prayer that he really is, really truly was his prayer. Not these other example prayers that he mentioned. Not the example, what the Christians call the Lord's Prayer. That was just an example he gave us. But what he truly prayed, we saw in the garden. Right? And what did he pray? All he, on his heart, was one thing only. That we be one with the Father. That is it. And that is what this whole Torah is all about. How much he loves us. How much he wants us to learn to draw near unto the Father. And this is what it's all about. So please, folks, check out the connections here in these offerings. Because this is how we draw near unto him, are the offerings. And we are the living sacrifice. And who is the example of that sacrifice? The Messiah. He was also the sacrifice. And he did it, and he wants us to do it just like he did. Right? Be like him. Be the offering that he was. You know, he was our example. We should be that living sacrifice as he was. That's what he's trying to get through to us. Okay? And we do this daily. Daily. You know? And these special days, we do along with the daily. And we see in on the Sabbath, there's literally a double portion, isn't there? That is so cool. On the Sabbath, there is a double portion. There is twice as much let's say drawing near unto him. Okay? Because there is another offering going on. You know? So we're with him twice as much on that day. The way I see it anyway. I mean, come on, they're offered, you know? There's twice as much. And I don't see this as work for anyone. I don't see this as work for the Levites who are slaughtering these things. Because every time they do it, oh my gosh, they were in the midst of the drawing near between the Father and the one bringing the offering. Think of that. Think of how that felt. It's like being filled with the Spirit, slam bam, and here we are thinking, oh, that's like work, oh gosh. No, I don't think so. This was all about the love between him and us. You know? Get this stupid work idea off your mind and think about what was really going on here. Because that's what matters. What was going on? The deeper meaning of these, you know, well, hey, sorry, Daily Man, if I'm going off here. But it's just truly awesome, the thought of what is going on here, truly, you know, between us and him. So anyway, notice, and I'll try to finish up, and sorry if it took so long, but notice that on the first day, and the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, our holy convocations, you would do no servile work. Okay? You see this on the Feast of Weeks also. It's a holy convocation. You will do no servile work. Let's see, does it end there? I don't know. And also, one other difference I wanted to note between here and Leviticus 23. We saw, now I mentioned the one thing. You don't see in these two chapters anything about the barley first fruits, right? Which our Messiah was. And why is that? Because that's when you go into the land, that's when that happens. That's when we're brought into the kingdom, that's when that happens. That happened with Messiah because he was brought into kingdom. He's there, right? He's there. He's in that kingdom. And thus he is our, he's doing this year to year. We can't because we're not there with him. We're not in the kingdom. But that's what it says in Micah 23. When you're brought into the land, you will do this. Well, we're not brought into the land yet. He hasn't brought us, given us our new bodies, and brought us into the kingdom yet, so we can't do that. Anyway, that's what the high priest does, and does it alone, you'll notice. He does it alone. Now, we are to help bring the barley. That's I think, our part of it. But I think that happens at kingdom time, you know? Just like it says. It doesn't say that here in 20 and 29. The people being brought into, they were being prepared, weren't in the land yet, but y'all wanted them to know, this is how we're going to do it, this is what we're going to do. He didn't mention it here, but he did mention it back in Micah 23. Now, the other difference is, here you see about the monthly offering, right? The beginning of months. This was not in Micah 23, but it is here. And you'll note that this also is where there is a sin offering, a goat. Yep, that's right. There is a sin offering on this day as well. Okay, so there's a sin offering on all of the holy convocations, as well as every day of Sukkot, by the way, which is very unique, but we won't get into that now. But there's also on the first day of every month, there is a sin offering for us. This is all about us. Again, remember, this is a cleansing thing. This is a renewal thing. This is a spiritual thing, you know, where he wants us cleansed so that we may draw near unto him. So please put these concepts together in terms of us being this living sacrifice and how we must draw near unto him. Korab. And the Korban, right? And the only other things I'll get into next chapter. So sorry if it took so long. Sorry if I might not have gotten through clearly. I'm doing the best I can. I just hope we can see the spiritual side of this is what I'm trying to get at. So, I yield the mic.
Thank you, Ken. Have I got the mic? I'm not showing myself at the mic. Okay. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate all that. And your heart is very pure as far as I can see. So, bless you for that. Are there other questions or comments on chapter 28? If you have a question or a comment, raise your hand. I'll be happy to give it to you. The mic, I mean. Yeah. Yeah, you were talking about the priests that it not being work for them and that on the Shabbat. Well, somebody thought that it was, or at least made the allusion to it being that way, or Yeshua would not have been talking to the scribes and Pharisees about, don't you know that the priests aren't defiled by making the offerings on the Shabbat day? Okay, even though that's what they do every day? You know? That's the implication anyway. And so it's somebody then was thinking that way. Whether or not it was, and Yeshua told them, you know, disabused them of that of that stuff. So, now, are there other questions or comments on Numbers chapter 28? Bamidbar chapter 28, in the wilderness. If not, we shall move on to 29. Okay. Hang on a second. It really bugs me that I can't see the mic, so hang on a second. There it is. I feel better now. Okay, moving on to chapter 29. I'll read the chapter, which is like, about 40 verses long, whatever it is. We'll read chapter 29 and then a commentary on it. And here goes. And in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, you shall have an holy convocation. You shall do no servile work. It is a day of blowing of trumpets unto you. And you shall offer a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto Jehovah, one young bullock, one ram, seven lambs of the first year without blemish, and their meat offering, flour mingled with oil, 3/10 deals for a bullock, 2/10 deals for a ram, 1/10 deal for one lamb, throughout the seven lambs, and one kid of the goats for a sin offering to make an atonement for you. Beside the burnt offering of the month, and his meat offering, and the daily burnt offering, and his meat offering, and the drink offerings, according to their manner, for a sweet savor, a sacrifice made by fire unto Jehovah. And ye shall on the 10th day of the seventh month, an holy convocation, and ye shall, Kodesh Mikra, and ye shall afflict your souls. You shall not do any work, but you shall offer a burnt offering unto Jehovah, a sweet savor, one young bullock, one ram, seven lambs of the first year. They shall be unto you without blemish, and their meat offering, flour mingled with oil, 3/10 deals to a bullock, 2/10 deals to one ram, several tenth deal for one lamb throughout the seven lambs, one kid of the goats, a sin offering, beside the sin offering of atonement, and the continual burnt offering, and the meat offering of it, and their drink offerings. And on the 15th day of the seventh month, you shall have an holy convocation of Kodesh Mikra, and you shall do no servile work, and you shall keep a feast unto Jehovah 7 days, and you shall offer a burnt offering, a sacrifice made by fire, of a sweet savor unto Jehovah, 13 young bullocks, 2 rams, and 14 lambs of the first year. They shall be without blemish, and their meat offering, flour mingled with oil, 3/10 deals unto every bullock of the 13 bullocks, 2/10 deals to each ram of the 2 rams, a several tenth deal for to each lamb of the 14 lambs, one kid of the goats, a sin offering, beside the continual burnt offering, his meat offering, and his drink offering. And on the second day, and this is the reason this is so long, because we're going to see each individual day has a different set of offerings. They're similar, but they're different, okay, per day. And that's in the number of bullocks that are offered. And on the second day, 12 young bullocks, 2 rams, 14 lambs of the first year without spot, and their meat offering and their drink offerings for the bullocks, for the rams, for the lambs, according to their number, after the manner, and one kid of the goats for a sin offering, beside the continual burnt offering and the meat offering thereof, and their drink offerings. And on the third day, 11 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 lambs of the first year without blemish, and their meat offering and their drink offerings for the bullocks, for the rams, for the lambs, shall be according to their number after the manner, and one goat, a sin offering, beside the continual burnt offering, and his meat offering, and his drink offering. And on the fourth day, 10 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 lambs of the first year without blemish, their meat offerings, their drink offerings for the bullocks, for the rams, for the lambs, according to their number after the manner, and one kid of the goats for a sin offering, beside the continual burnt offering, his meat offering, and his drink offering. And on the fifth day, 9 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 lambs of the first year, without spot, and their meat offering and their drink offerings for the bullocks, for the rams, for the lambs, according to their number after the manner, and one goat, a sin offering, beside the continual burnt offering and his meat offering and his drink offering. And on the sixth day, 8 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 lambs of the first year without blemish, and their meat offerings and their drink offerings for the bullocks, for the rams, for the lambs, according to their number, after the manner, and one goat, a sin offering, beside the continual burnt offering, his meat offering, and his drink offering. And on the seventh day, 7 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 lambs of the first year without blemish, and their meat offering and their drink offerings for the bullocks, for the rams, and for the lambs, according to their number after the manner, and one goat for a sin offering, beside the continual burnt offering, his meat offerings, and his drink offering. On the eighth day you shall have a solemn assembly. Another Kodesh Mikra. A solemn assembly. You shall do no servile work, but ye shall offer a burnt offering, a sacrifice made by fire of a sweet savor unto Yehovah, 1 bullock, 1 ram, 7 lambs of the first year without blemish, their meat offering and their drink offerings for the bullock, for the ram, and for the lambs, according to their number, after the manner, and 1 goat for a sin offering, according to the continual burnt offerings and his meat offering and his drink offering. These ye shall do unto Yehovah in your set feasts, beside your vows and your freewill offerings and your burnt offerings and your meat offerings and for your drink offerings and for your peace offerings. And Moshe told the children of Israel according to all that Yehovah commanded Moshe. That's a whole lot of rams and lambs and bullocks and goats. Wow. On Yom Teruah, only 1 young bullock was offered specifically for Yom Teruah, where in each of the spring feasts, or festivals, there have been 2 young bulls offered. The 1 bullock, 1 ram, 7 lambs, and 1 he-goat are in addition to the daily, Shabbat if applicable, and Rosh Chodesh offerings, 2 bullocks, no goat. There is a different verb used here concerning the offering. Up until here, the verb has been, you shall offer. Vahikravtem. Vahikravtem, an offering. Okay? And an offering. Here, Yehovah said, you shall make. Vaasitem. Vaasitem, an offering. Yom Teruah was not just a Rosh Chodesh. The command to make the offering on Yom Teruah is not applied to every Rosh Chodesh, only this Rosh Chodesh. It was designed as a Moad and as a Mikra Kodesh. Schottenstein's Chumash has an interesting note on page 199 in the Bamidbar text. So let's see, page 199. I open right to it. And you shall make. It's very short, so here it is. Throughout these chapters, the Torah uses the verb, and you shall offer. The verb make, used for the offering of Rosh Chodesh, alludes to a unique aspect of the Day of Judgment. Elohim says, as soon as you have appeared before me for judgment and have been acquitted, you are regarded as newly made creatures. In other words, without spot or blemish, as if you had just been created. Now, is that cool or is that cool? Okay. That's all from Schottenstein's for now. Okay. Where am I? Here we go. Shades of 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 17 and Galatians chapter 6 and verse 15, where it is written, therefore, if any man be in Mashiach, he is a new creature. Old things are passed away. Behold, all things are become new. For in Mashiach Yeshua, neither circumcision availeth anything, nor uncircumcision, but a new creature. Get it? You're a new creature. Something that has never existed before. Okay? That's very cool. It was the day that the teruah was blown on the shofarim to call Israel to execute Yehovah's command to move out. One of the themes of Yom Teruah is Resurrection Day. Now, many Orthodox Jews believe that it will be on a future Yom Teruah when the dead will be resurrected. And that, by the way, is from... Oh, it doesn't show. Hold on a minute. I got a bomb here. From Talmud Rosh Hashanah 16b. Okay, that's from the Talmud. If the dead will answer the call of the shofarim on Yom Teruah, don't you think it might be wise for us to listen for it and to respond to it as well? Do you think that the rabbis of the Mishkan and the First Temple offered all these special offerings for 2 days to ensure that they didn't miss Yom Teruah, like they have since the Babylonian captivity? Not that they've missed Yom Teruah, but because they've offered for 2 days so that they wouldn't miss it. Okay? They actually added to the deal. But anyway. Or do you think they actually knew which day was Yom Teruah? The difference, since the Bar Kokhba rebellion in 140 CE or thereabouts, and the exile from Haaretz, is the use of an intercalated calendar rather than observation of the new moon of the seventh month in the land. Of course, there are people there to observe it now, but I guess the tradition trumps obedience to Yehovah's commands. Anyway, not that Yehudism is alone in observing tradition over obedience to her creator. Christians observe their own pagan holidays and claim that they are keeping them to Yehovah, like Jeroboam's Israel did with the golden calves in Bethel and in Dan. Now, in verses 7 through 11 give instruction for the offerings to be made on Yom HaKippurim. On Yom HaKippurim, the burnt offering was like that of Yom Teruah, except that two more goats were set apart as the goats for atonement. This is spelled out in Leviticus 23. All we're looking at here is burnt offerings, free will offerings, if you will, so that there is no detail about the goats for Yehovah and Azazel. Now, beginning in verse 12, are the special offerings for the Feast of Sukkot. There is a different special offering every day, differing in the number of young bullocks that are offered, descending in number from 13 on the first day of Sukkot to 7 on the last day of Sukkot. This would total 70 young bullocks offered during the 7-day feast. 70 is the number of nations in the world according to Genesis chapter 10. Chumash's note to verse 13 says that if the 70 primary nations of the world knew what these offerings meant to them, they would send legions to protect Jerusalem to ensure that no one interfered with the festivities of Sukkot. In the final millennial Sukkot, the nations will send their legions, but it won't be to protect the city. In Revelation chapter 20 and verses 7 through 9, it says, "And when the 1,000 years are expired, Hasatan will be loosed out of his prison, and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about and the beloved city. And fire came down from Elohim out of heaven and devoured them." Every day's offerings are the same except for the bulls for the nations being in descending number from 13 to 7. There were the bulls, 2 rams, 14 spotless male yearling lambs for the burnt offering, and a male goat for a sin offering every day. Why the descending number of offering for the primary nations of the world? The same total would be offered if they offered 10 every day. So it isn't just the total number that's important. As the number declines, so the sages say, does the influence of the nations of the world in Israel's existence? They see a gradual lessening of influence over Yehovah's people until the nations finally accept the spiritual leadership of Israel. I see it as a spiritual declension of the nations until they are finally defeated and forced under Mashiach's authority in the millennium. So I agree with the sages as far as they go. I just carry it to Rosh Israel, Mashiach, as Sar Israel, the prince. Rashi makes the connection between 98 lambs, which represent Israel, with the offering of 98 curses placed on Israel in Devarim 28:15 and following. I think that this is at least an interesting juxtaposition. Numbers really and truly do mean things in the Torah. The last special Musaf offering is the one offered on Shemini Atzeret, that is the eighth great day. Okay, the last great day of the feast in John chapter 7 and verse 37. This one is identical to Yom Teruah's special offering. So the first and last offerings of the seventh month look exactly the same. This day is called a solemn assembly in King James Version, a restriction in Torah's Tanakh, or rather in Stone's Tanakh, following Rashi's designation. Atzeret equals restraints. That's what it means. So eight restraints. Okay? Shemini Atzeret can be seen as the eighth restrains. Okay? The eighth restrains. That could mean that this is the last of the fall and yearly feasts of Yehovah, so the last of the Mikra Kodesh for the year. The feasting is now restricted to the weekly Shabbat and family gatherings. It could also be, like the sages say in the Chumash notes on pages 203 and 204, in the second paragraph. Let me have a look at this now. 203 and 204. Okay, a restriction. I'm going to read this whole thing here to you. It's the beginning, as if for verse 35. It says, a translation follows Rashi, who interprets the word as a restriction from the labor or a restriction on travel. For the pilgrims in Jerusalem were to not leave for home until after Shemini Atzeret. The translation of Onkelos is the more familiar one, assembly, which probably refers to the above requirement that the pilgrims remain in Jerusalem and thus be assembled before Elohim for one more day. It also coincides with the following commandment, or a comment rather, of the sages. And here it is. During the entire Sukkot festival, 70 bulls are offered on behalf of the Gentile nations. After the festival, when the pilgrims are ready to return to their homes, Elohim says to Israel, as it were, make a small banquet for me so that I can enjoy your exclusive company. This can be likened to a king who ordered his servants to make a great banquet. When it was over, he asked his dearest friends to arrange a small meal where he, the king, could enjoy their intimate company. So too, following the offerings for the nations, Elohim longs for the company of his own nation, according to Rashi. I think that's really cool. And I think that's probably exactly the way it is. Let's see now, where was I? Here we go. That's the end of what I'm going to share from the Chumash. Okay. I must again point out that all these offerings are in addition to the daily Tamid offerings. Also that every offering has a threefold application: literal, prophetic, and spiritual. The prophetic instance of every sacrifice offering points to its fulfillment in Mashiach. The spiritual aspect is the attitude we ought to have to offer our bodies as living sacrifices. And the literal shows forth our understanding of the other two. If we will not offer a substitutionary lamb, will we offer our bodies as living sacrifices, allowing Yehovah to transform us into the image of His Son? And that's the end of my commentary for today on the Torah. And I'm open to questions and comments on any of the Torah portion, chapter 28 or 29. If you have a question or a comment, raise your hand. I'll be happy to give up the mic. Anybody? Anybody at all? Patty? I'm certain that you've got something for us, Patty. Truth and Ken, you have your hand up and you may take the mic.
Thank you, brother. Firstly, I really think it's cool how chapter 29 is separate from chapter 28. remember, each, I believe that as it is, each scroll in the Torah begins with the letter Vav, which is in the old Paleo Hebrew picture of a nail showing connection. So, you know, every new scroll is connected to the previous through the letter Vav, right? It's kind of cool, yeah. And I see that Vav here at the beginning of this chapter, Vav. But yet, this chapter seems to be separate from 28, because chapter 28 was all about the spring and or summer moed. There it is. This chapter is about the seventh month moed, moedim, which are all about his second coming, correct? That's the first cool thing, I think. It's good to separate that out. Another thing I wanted to just share with you what I see about something Mark was talking about earlier, which was the difference in this offering on Yom Teruah, because in 29 verse 2 it says, and ye shall offer, which is the word asah, and the word asah is used literally thousands of times in the Torah, usually rendered as to do, to keep, to make. Good example, like I was sharing in the text earlier, you know, we are to asah his commandments. Okay? We are to asah his commandments. To keep, to do. Same with this 29 verse 2 regarding Yom Teruah. We are to asah the offering. To keep, to do. We are not this burnt offering, are we? That's the difference. We are not this burnt offering. We are the other burnt offerings, right? We do draw near unto him in all these other days, in these other ways. But we are not the returning of Messiah, are we? I think that's the big difference in Yom Teruah. This day is about the coming of the king. We are not that king. Thus, we are not that offering. This is just like, I think, very much likened unto what's in Micah chapter 23 regarding the feast of first fruits, the barley harvest. Okay? That also is not something we do. That's something the high priest waves all by himself. Okay? He is the waver. He's the one that does it. We don't do that. Same with this. We're not going to be the coming king. So we simply do, as in keeping his commandments, we keep and remember this day because it's huge, right? All of his moedim are huge for us because that's how we draw near unto him. That's how he loves us. That's how he wants us to get it. Get the picture and to live the rehearsals, you know, to do them, to love him, to be like him, and to do this for him. That's how I see that word asah. So that's, I think, the big difference in this particular feast day. Why the offering is not worded the same, I truly see it as because this, we are not this particular burnt offering. We are the others. We are to be like them. But we are not to be like this one. This one is all about... what is LS saying? My middle name is gay? okay, I'm sorry. You got me off track there, Lumi Spirit. Oh, gay. Okay, yeah, I thought you were getting into gayety here, and I was like, uh-oh, what is this? But no, I guess it must be the name you just don't like. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I must be trying to multitask. I'm sorry, I was looking back at the text, because I saw some, you know, I saw it going by, meaning somebody was doing something, so I just glanced over. But anyway, so that's it about that offering. And again, I wanted to point out, we see, even through this chapter, we see a holy convocation, and then immediately thereafter we see, you shall do no work. Okay? So, every time we see a Kodesh Mikra, we then also see, do no, or asah, there's that word asah, do no call work. Malacha. Okay? Now, is this the same, which I think maybe I might have heard Mark say was the same, which I don't think it is the same. Is this the same as a solemn assembly? No. A solemn assembly is not a Kodesh. Let me get the words right here. A Kodesh Mikra, which is holy convocation, that is not the same as a, what we read in the English, solemn assembly, which I think is such a bad understanding. We need to wipe that concept out of our head, because, you know, and this is what I have a real gripe with English and its renderings, you know? I really do. It gives us the wrong impressions and just leads people sort of, I think, slightly astray. But anyway, this word, let me just get down to where it offers this word, if I could find it in this chapter. A solemn assembly. Can someone help me out here? What verse am I looking for here? Solemn assembly regarding the eighth day. On the eighth day, here it is, verse 35. Okay? Verse 35 says, on the eighth day, ye shall have a solemn assembly. That word is atzerah. Okay? Atzerah. You hear that? Not the same as Kodesh Mikra. Okay? Just so you know. Now, atzerah, you see it here on the eighth day. Did you see the word atzerah, or solemn assembly, did you see it for the seventh day of unleavened bread, for example? Did you see that in last chapter, or do you see it in Vayikra chapter 23? Can anybody give me a yes or a no? Did anybody notice? Does anybody have have an interest in that? Do they think maybe the seventh day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is also a solemn assembly, so-called, which, again, I hate that word, but anyway, I'm not seeing any text. Okay, just so you know, no, it's not in Bamidbar 28, and no, it's not in Vayikra 23, but is that seventh day a so-called solemn assembly? Yes, it is. That's where here a little, there a little has is so important. You know, here a little, there a little. Because if you look in Devarim 16, verse 8, and if someone wants to post that for me, I'd appreciate it. Let me see. Devarim 16. Yeah, if you look at Devarim 16, verse 8, you will see, and I will post this in the room since I don't see anybody else doing it. 6 days shall thou eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh shall be a, and there's that word, and let me just confirm it, in the Hebrew, there's that word, atzerah. There we go. Now, you don't see this, again, in Vayikra 23, and you don't see this in the Midbar 28. And thus people might think, oh, gee, see here, the eighth day of Sukkot is different from the seventh day of unleavened bread. But as you can see here in Devarim 16, verse 8, No, it is the same. It also is a Atzerah. Now, Atzerah has a root, okay, meaning Atzerah is the Strong's number H6116, okay? It has a root of Atzar, okay? And Atzar, I believe, let me see if I can find it. Atzar is one number before it, H6115. Okay? What does this mean? This is what's so important. What does this mean? I want to read from you to you what Bruce Jenner. No! Oh, I don't want him on my mind. let's see. Who was I thinking of? Jeff, the guy who does the ancient Hebrew lexicon. Shame on me. That's it, Alice. You said it. I saw that word gay. Oh, no. Benner, yes, Benner. Well, see, there's another bit of thing. You know, Benner and Jenner are sort of very close. Oh, gosh, shame on me. I'm sorry, y'all. Jeff Benner, not Bruce Jenner, Jeff Benner puts out the ancient Hebrew lexicon. He says this word, let's see, where was I at? He says that this word, Atzar, or Atzer, however you want to pronounce it, is, and this is how he puts it, to stop from occurring in the sense of halting, shutting in, or restraining. Oh, I love that word, that concept, shut in. Mm. Because he also says, in the prison sense, he says, in the sense of being shut in, as in a prison. Isn't that funny? Because how many times, and some of you may remember, how the Haftarah and sometimes the Brit Hadashah speaks about being shut up unto Torah. Shut up unto Torah. Like being fenced in, you know? Really cool concept there. But anyway, that's what I want to sort of connect with, is this concept of being shut in, or being, so that he can gather us for this purpose, you know? But this is the ending of something. But at the same time, shutting in, okay? And, you know, when you put these concepts together, you get the right picture, not the words solemn assembly. So all I can say is please look at that in the Strong's, the Brown Driver Briggs, maybe, if you want. Even better yet, Ancient Hebrew Lexicon by Jeff Benner. You know, he's actually showing you what the Hebrew characters, putting them together, is showing us. And this is really hitting the nail where it belongs, I think, on the head, you know, to stop. This is where the festival, the 7-day event, comes to an end, okay? And that's what this word is about. Not a solemn assembly. It's not about that. It is about bringing to an end this awesome event that just happened, okay? This 1-week-long event, which we know a day is under 1,000 years. So really, what is this a picture of? It's the coming, or the bringing to an end, man living in the flesh. Is it not? Isn't that the bigger picture? Man living in the flesh, bringing it to an end, shutting it in, okay? Keeping that concept in mind, shutting it in, putting it together, shutting it in, and then, boom. Wow. It's closed. You know? It's closed. That 7-day event is closed. It's brought to an end. It's closed. A change has occurred. You know? Think about that. That's the big thing here. You know? It is ended. Atzar. It is changed. There's a change. as we know, after the seventh day or seventh millennium, there will be major change, a big one. There'll be no more sin in this world, you know? And that will be shut up. I mean, we've been shut up unto sin in Torah, okay? But for a good reason. Because we're going to bust out. You know, he talks about this great release, this busting out. And this is what this whole concept, this shutting in and the end of something, this end of this week-long end is all about. It's the bigger picture, you know? And then we're going to burst forth in our new bodies as a new being. I mean, everyone, okay? Yeah, some of us might be after the sixth day, but think about it, the seventh day, there'll be no more sin. So, this is huge, you know? And I think that is why we see a big difference, too, in the days of Sukkot here in chapter 29 versus the days of unleavened bread in chapter 28. Again, I like the changing of chapters here, you know. 28 is about, you know, while we're in the flesh, okay? Trying to keep ourselves clean. That's what this whole concept of unleavened bread is all about. But what is Sukkot really about? Chapter 29. When he comes as conquering king. What is that week-long thing all about? You know? That's about us being with him, and that's why I think there is an offering each and every day. Each and every day there is a sin offering. Ding, ding, ding. A goat for a sin offering every single day. And yes, this is a picture of that 7,000-year plan, too, you know? And I think that's why you see 70 books, you know, regarding all the nations. And what did Yaakov say to his sons about this passing down of the inheritance? You know, he really said, well, Ephraim will be great, will be greater. And something about being grafted in, you know, there's something about being said there about being grafted in. And to wait, we know that the Haftorah speaks about this waiting, right, of the until all the Gentiles come in, right? That's what it's all about. All the nations coming in, you know. Yah is waiting for that moment. So that's what those 70 bullocks are all about, right? The 70 nations, all the nations of the world. That's something that was spoken about in Yaakov coming into Mitzrayim. There were 70 children, and we see that, I think, with Noah also, right? About 70. So that's when he's speaking of the world, you know? So anyway, take a look, folks, sometime at that word for solemn assembly. It's I think that English is a terrible rendering. It has nothing to do with what you have in your mind about a solemn assembly. It's not. That's not what it's about. It's about the closing of something huge, important, the shutting in, you know? So consider that, if you would. And again, note, just like we saw in the last chapter, with each and every holy convocation or Kodesh Mikra, each and every one, there is a sin offering, and there is no work, okay? Each and every one of them. So keep that in mind in our work weeks, year-round. I don't know about you all, but I set those days aside. I don't work. I don't go to work on those days, you know? Now, we don't see Holy Convocation on the monthly. Okay, I think there was a difference there, was there not, on the monthlies. But there was a cleansing. There was a sin offering. That's the one big difference, I think, in that one, was that that's not a holy convocation. But that's the one instance where there is a sin offering without the holy convocation. Okay? I just wanted to point that out. Anyway, that's all I have, and I yield the mic.
Thank you, Ken. All good stuff again. My goodness. Are there any other questions or comments on the Torah portion for today? That is chapters 28 and 29 of Numbers, or Bamidbar. Any questions or comments on the Torah portion? No? Then we're going to move on to our Haftarah portion, which is Ezekiel chapter 45. Now, the subject of our Haftarah begins in verse 9, although it tells us that we're going to be studying from verse 15 through, or is it 12? Anyway, I forget now what it is. Hang on a second. yes, 13 to 25. So, we'll be moving to that here in just a second. Now, the subject is, begins in verse 9, rather, where Yehovah is rebuking the princes of Israel. And I think we are at the beginning of the millennium and the kingdom of Yehovah in the land at the dedication of the third temple. And verses 9 through 12 are important to get the context. So we're going to read those along with the rest of the Haftarah portion, which goes through verse 25. So here we go. Chapter 45, verses 9 to 25. Thus saith Adonai Yehovah, let it suffice you, O princes of Israel, remove violence and spoil, and execute judgment and justice. Take away your exactions from my people, saith Adonai Yehovah. You shall have just balances, and a just ephah, and a just bath. The ephah and the bath shall be of one measure, and the bath may contain the tenth part of an omer, and the ephah a tenth part of an omer. The measure thereof shall be after the omer. And the shekel shall be 20 gerahs, 20 shekels, 5 and 20 shekels, 15 shekels shall be your maneh. This is the oblation that you shall offer, the sixth part of an ephah of an omer of wheat, and you shall give the sixth part of an ephah of an omer of barley. Concerning the ordinance of oil, the bath of oil, the tenth part of a bath out of the core, which is an omer, of 10 baths. For 10 baths are an omer. And one lamb out of the flock, out of the 200, out of the fat pastures of Israel, for a meat offering, and for a burnt offering, and for peace offerings, to make reconciliation for them, saith Adonai Yehovah. All the people of the land shall give this oblation for the prince of Israel, and it shall be the prince's part, burnt offerings and meat offerings and drink offerings in the feasts and in the new moons and in the Sabbaths, in all assemblies of the house of Israel. He shall prepare the sin offering and the meat offering and the burnt offering and the peace offerings to make reconciliation for the house of Israel. Thus saith Adonai Yehovah, in the first of the month, thou shalt take a young bullock without blemish and cleanse the sanctuary. And the priest shall take the blood of the sin offering and put upon the posts of the house and upon the four corners of the settle of the altar and upon the posts of the gate of the inner court. And so thou shalt do the seventh of the month for every one that erreth, and for him, and for the simple, so shall you reconcile the house. In the first month, in the 14th day of the month, you shall have a Passover. A feast of 7 days, unleavened bread shall be eaten. And upon that day shall the prince prepare for himself and for all the people of the land a bullock, a sin offering. And 7 days of the feast he shall prepare a burnt offering to Yehovah, 7 bullocks and 7 rams without blemish, daily the 7 days. and a kid of the goats daily a sin offering. And he shall prepare a meat offering of an ephah for a bullock, and an ephah for a ram, and an hin of oil for an ephah. In the seventh, in the 15th day of the month, shall he do the like in the feast of the 7 days, according to the sin offering, according to the burnt offering, and according to the meat offering, and according to the oil. Yehovah is angry with the princes and priests, the rulers and the judges, because they have oppressed the people through high taxes and tithes, exactions, and showing partiality to the dispensation of justice, preferring the rich and influential. In other words, what Israel's princes were doing before Moshiach the prince came to town is very much like what the world's governments and politicians are doing right now today. The government of Israel had become fascistic. Moshiach expects the princes of Israel to be content with their inheritances and to deal justly and bring righteous judgment in every matter. He expects there to be just weights and measures and honest money, and that the princes enforce them righteously. He goes so far as to prescribe what the weights should be. An ephah was a dry measure, like a bushel or a peck. A bath was a wet measure, like a gallon or a quart. An ephah and a bath are the same physical volume, which equaled 1/10 of an omer. That's what verses 9 through 11 talked about, or through 12 talked about. Now, in verses 13 to 25, the oblation for the dedication of the third temple will be 1/6 omer of wheat or barley, about a half bushel. A bath of oil is about 6 gallons, roughly equivalent to a bushel in volume. A 1/10 of a bath equals 0.6 gallons, or about 2.3 liters. One ram of every 200 is to be offered as a burnt offering. This is from the nation, so I suppose that each family would count his sheep and send 0.5% of the for the dedication of the temple. The dedication will take about 1 week to complete, according to chapter 43 and verse 20. That's a lot of lambs sent by the people to the prince for offering. It sure looks to me that the prince is actually partaking in the Musaf offerings on Pesach and Sukkot in the millennial temple, preparing the animals for offering. Since when does the priest have anything to do with the offerings in the temple? Since that priest will be the Melchizedek, Moshiach Yeshua. He is the high priest as well as the prince. The sons of Tzadok are the priests who will actually offer the burnt offerings for a sweet savor to Yehovah. The Musaf offerings are different in the kingdom temple than in the first and second temples. The offerings at Pesach and Sukkot times will be the same. 7 bullocks, 7 rams daily for a burnt offering, and a goat each day for a sin offering. On the first day of each feast, he also offers an extra bullock for a sin offering for himself and the people before any of the other animals are offered. Shavuot and Yom Teruah, Yom Kippur, will not be observed in the third temple. Get that? Let me say that again. Where was I? I got lost. Oh, here we go. Shavuot, Yom Teruah, and Yom Kippur will not be offered in the third temple. Sin offerings are for unintentional or inadvertent sins committed while guarding more important Torah, like saving a man's life or even an animal's life. Life takes precedence over anything else. Do you see, as I do, that Melchizedek will be offering sin offerings in the third temple? That is because he is fulfilling the role of the high priest. He is following the instructions and must do them at their proper times, even if that means transgressing another commandment in order to do so. The sin offering is to provide him the pardon for offending the lesser of his keeping of the greater commandment. so. Melchizedek, Yeshua HaMashiach, will be offering sin offerings in the third temple, because in order for him to do the greater commandment, he must violate a minor commandment, and there must be an offering for it. And he will fulfill it. Isn't that something interesting? Anyway, I'm open to questions and comments. And did somebody block that guy? I hope. Okay. Questions or comments on the Torah or the Haftarah? I'm open to questions and comments on all of them. Thank you, Patty. I appreciate that. Thank you, Rip, for banning him. Questions or comments? Any questions or comments on the Torah or the Haftarah? Saved in the name of Jesus, welcome to the room. Glad to see you here, and Shabbat Shalom to you. Shemuel. I'm sorry, I get you now. Okay, Shemuel, welcome to the room. Glad to see you too, and Shabbat Shalom to you. Anybody else new? Big Seven Slick, welcome to you too. I've never seen you in the room. Welcome to Fulfilling Torah and Shabbat Shalom. Any questions or comments on the Torah or the Haftarah portion for today? No questions or comments on the Torah or the Haftarah for today. We'll move on to the Psalm. We can go to Psalm 115, which is our Psalm for today. And that's what we're going to do. Still no hands up. Okay, Psalm 115. Not unto us, O Yehovah, not unto us, but unto thy name give glory, for thy mercy, for thy truth's sake. Wherefore should the heathen say, where now their Elohim? But our Elohim in the heavens, he hath done whatsoever he hath pleased. Their idols, silver and gold, the works of men's hands, they have mouths, but they speak not, eyes they have, but they see not, they have ears, but they hear not, noses have they, but they smell not, they have hands, but they handle not, feet have they, but they walk not, neither speak they through their throat. They that make them are like unto them, everyone that trusteth in them. O Israel, trust thou in Yehovah. He is your help and their shield. O house of Aharon, trust in Yehovah. He their help and their shield. Ye that fear Yehovah, trust in Yehovah. He your help and your shield. Yehovah hath been mindful of us. He will bless us. He will bless the house of Israel. He will bless the house of Aharon. He will bless them that fear Yehovah, small and great. Yehovah shall increase you more and more, you and your children, ye blessed of Yehovah which made heaven and earth. The heaven, even the heavens, Yehovah's. But the earth hath he given to the children of men. The dead praise not Yehovah, neither any that go down into silence. But he will bless Yehovah from this time forth. We will bless Yehovah from this time forth and forevermore. Praise Yehovah. Hallelujah. I think that this psalm may be set prophetically in the early years of the millennium. Idolatry has been put down only shortly before by the conquering Mashiach, who then took his place on the throne of David in Jerusalem and set up deputies, or viceroys, in the nations of the earth. The first years of the kingdom will be filled with Hodu and Hallel to Yehovah. But it will only be a few years before passive rebellion against Yehovah and his rod of iron begins in the hearts of men. They will submit to Yeshua's authority, but not willingly. And they will be having children who will be raised in the nurture and admonition of their parents' passive rebellion. They too will submit until the end of the millennium, when the adversary is released from his prison to lead the final Gog Umagog rebellion, the Gog and Magog, against the king and his remnant encamped around Jerusalem for the final feast of Sukkot in this creation. They will have been idolaters in their hearts for almost a millennium and will go fully into idolatry with the adversary as its object. I think that the idea in verses 2 through 8 and the idolatry will be more or less general. That is the idea in verses 2 through 8, and the idolatry will be more or less general, with only a small remnant staying faithful to King Moshiach. The idolaters think that they cannot see Yehovah, when he is, in fact, sitting on the throne in the resurrected flesh of Yeshua. Of course, being Yehovah, he is also in the heavens, and had both done what he had pleased and allowed what it pleased him to allow. Please understand that the idols of verse 4 are both the images that are made from silver and gold, and the silver and gold itself. The love of money is just another form of idolatry. Idols are almost as stupid as the people who worship them. The idolaters make the image with their own hands. So he knows without a doubt that it is powerless over him, and yet he bows before it, prays for its protection and leadership against enemies. He shaped the mouth, the eyes, the nose, the ears, the hands of the idol, and yet he expects the thing of his own making to do what he is incapable of doing for himself. But we are admonished to place our trust in Yehovah, who created everything that exists by the word of his power. The same word of his power that will sit on the millennial kingdom's throne in the flesh of our resurrected Mashiach Yeshua. There are three groups of people who are admonished to trust Yehovah to be their help and shield. Number one, Israel, the Beit Yaakov. Two, the priests of Yehovah, Beit Aharon. And three, whosoever will fear Yehovah. And all who will trust in Yehovah will receive blessing from Yehovah. The blessing follows the trust. When we trust him to do what he has promised he shall do, he thinks about us. He keeps us in mind whose hearts and minds are stayed upon him. In Isaiah chapter 26 and verse 3, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, perfect shalom, or rather, shalom, shalom, probably, I haven't looked it up, but I think that's the way it goes, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. The blessings that are immediately forthcoming for those who trust him are physical multiplicity. This may come in the form of children and grandchildren, position, honor, and or wealth. Yehovah will bless us with the blessings we can handle. For example, if money will cause us to stumble, he will wait until it will not to bless us with it. Okay? Let me read that again. I want to make that point. If money will cause us to stumble, he will wait until it will not to bless us with it. Those of you who, like myself, have not been blessed with lots of monetary wealth, think about that. Perhaps we have not proven ourselves faithful in little. Verse 16 should be instructive for those who are looking for a pie in the sky in the great by and by. We are not spending more than a few days in heaven, if any at all. We are designed for life on earth, not in heaven. Oh, we'll have access to the heavenlies in our resurrected bodies, but we will not be there for long, if at all. Yehovah made the earth, and then he made us to inhabit it, and to be stewards over it. His plan has not changed even one skosh spelling. I don't know how to spell that, but not one skosh, whatever that is. And the prophecy of Yochanan in Revelation doesn't do anything to make me think that he will change it in the future. We will live on the new earth, not in the new heaven. Now, the new heavens will be created as well. And I'm getting off topic here, but I really and truly think that those are places for us to bear rule as viceroys of King Mashiach. Okay? Like cities in Matthew chapter 25. He's been faithful in little, give him much. Okay? He who is faithful in little, give him much. Okay? You were faithful in taking the two pieces of silver and making them into four. You may rule over four cities. You took the five pieces of silver and you made them into ten. You may rule over ten cities. You who took the one piece of silver and buried it in the ground, give that to the guy with ten. By the way, he gets to rule the 11th city as well. And he who is faithful in little shall be trusted in much. Okay? That's the whole point of that. And I fail in it way too often. And I'm sure that most of you out there will say that you do too. Okay? I'm open to questions and comments on the Torah, the Haftarah, or the Psalm. Any questions and comments? Raise your hand, I'll be happy to give you the mic. Somebody's got more than one name, huh? Truth and Ken, you have your hand up and you may take the mic. Take it away, bro.
I just had two quick things. Firstly, verse 4, the idols are silver and gold, the work of man's hands. I think it's interesting to note that he's telling us that our idols, we make ourselves. Sometimes I think people don't recognize that, but it's things we put into our own minds that become idols, you know, our own works, in other words. If it's of man's hands, then it's our own works that create such idols. But you know, I didn't realize this particular verse, verse 17, I hadn't seen this one before or used it as a reference. I've used many references in the past that show that that when one dies, one does not go to heaven and jump around and praise Yah and all that kind of stuff. But one goes to the grave and sleeps quietly, does not speak. And it's very interesting, this particular verse gives me more of that thought, that the dead praise not Yah. And by the way, that's not Yahuwah, which I find very interesting too. This is the more poetic name that's used here, Yah, Yod-Heh, not Yod-Heh-Wav-Heh. But anyway, so the dead, the dead being the Muth in Hebrew, the Muth praise not Yah, neither any that go down as Yavad. We see that word a lot, you know, something, you know, diving down into something, being cast down into silence. Now that word silence is very interesting, because there is no other instance of this word in all of Scripture, this word Duma in the Hebrew. And even the word Duma, there's no root. I don't see a word like doom, like D-U-M or D-U-U-M or something. There's no root to it. It's just a word all by itself, Duma. And I see in the Strong's it just says meaning to be dumb, to be silenced. But then it says figuratively death. Let me see if the brown driver Briggs gets anything more to that. No, same thing there. Silence. Ancient Hebrew lexicon. I don't know if this is the same. It must be, yeah. It says here the pictograph is a door representing the idea of moving back and forth. That's the Dalit, by the way. The Mem, a picture of water that can represent any liquid, especially blood. Combine these pictures, these two, moving back and forth of water or the flowing of blood. Similarly, the grape plant takes water from the ground and moves it to the fruit, where the water becomes the blood of the grape. Interesting. Okay. that's just looking at the Dalit Mem. Now, I do know that the hay is often used as a, something being revealed, okay? So it could be the revealing of this in some way, shape, or form. Anyway, that's the word Duma, into silence, go down into silence. I've heard before that my uncles have believed that my one aunt really did see, that they believed that my grandmother saw her husband after he had died, my granddad, riding a white horse with a big smile, and she knows that that was her sign. She said she saw him, and she knows he's up there, just as happy as can be, living with a Messiah. Now, of course, if he were living with Messiah right now, he would certainly be praising. And this is completely contradictory to that thought. The dead praise not Yah. Sorry, not Yahuwah, but Yah. The dead praise not Yah. But we will bless him from the time forth and forevermore. Now, I know, too, you could take this in a different rendering and just say, well, the dead isn't everyone that dies. The dead are just those that are, let's say, walking dead, those that are, that are not alive spiritually. Because I've heard this context as well, to say that, you should apply a spiritual concept to this as well, so maybe you can. In which case, the dead could be those that are alive, but they're not, alive to Yah. They're dead to Him. They're like the walking dead. They certainly praise not Yah. Okay, that could be a concept there we could consider. So, just wanted to point that verse out. I thought that verse was a good one I could use in my listing of those that do talk about the dead. Okay? Anyway, good chapter. One of very few that I recall that points out the house of Yisrael and the house of Aaron separately. Like we see in verse 12, I hadn't seen one. I don't recall seeing one like this before. You don't see, let's say, the house of Israel and the house of Yehuda, which is more often than not, you see that differentiation. But this house of Israel here could literally be all of his people, whereas the house of Aaron, remember, was accounted for or given duties differently from his people, right? I mean, the house of Israel was given inheritance. The house of Aaron was given Yah for their inheritance. Okay? So, blessing the house of Israel could mean regarding land, right? The kingdom. But blessing the house of Aaron would be with Yah himself. So, there could be seen a difference there in those two houses in that way. Okay? Just something to consider. And that's all that I have. I yield the mic.
Thank you, Ken. Wow, I got the mic locked on just by pushing the button once. Can you all hear me? Okay, good. Are there other questions or comments on the Torah, Haftarah, or the Psalm? Yep. Okay, we... oh, Rip, you have your hand up. Go ahead and take the mic.
Yes, Brother Mark, I understand that Big Slick had a question before he was inadvertently bounced, so we're asking him to type his question in again, because he can't use a mic, he's in a library. So if you could stand by a minute and watch for Big Slick's question. Thank you.
If America is Mystery Babylon, then how does it fulfill Revelation 17, Martyrs and Blood of the Saints criteria? That is a big if. I believe that the United States is the military arm of Babylon. Babylon is a much larger thing than just one place or one seat. Okay? We're the military arm for sure. Babylon is the mixture of all the religions and politics and all that stuff mixed together, and so it doesn't really. I mean, when it says Mystery Babylon and it describes the religious Babylon in chapter 17, that I believe is describing the mystery religion, the worship of the. Of the dragon and all of the beasts that are involved. The first beast, the second beast, and image of the beast. So it's a quaternity, if you will. I think I spoke about that in TTRT this week. If not, I'll speak about it next week. But it's kind of a quaternity, you know, not just a trinity. And that's bad enough. That's the religious aspect of it. Then in chapter 18, it talks about the commercial aspect of it. And I think that also deals with the United States, but not just the United States, but also London, which is the seat of the economic structure of the world order. Okay, and then Rome is kind of the seat of the religious structure, or it will be. And since Islam is a daughter of Rome, then they're going to be involved as well. And since the Protestant Christianity is a daughter of Rome, they're going to be involved as well. You know, so that's all the daughters of the woman that rides the beast, right? So the woman herself. Believe is Rome, the daughters that are drunk on the same blood, the entire world system, and it's that which we have to work at least in our own lives against, okay, and to try to influence people to come out of it, come out of her and be ye separate. You know, that's what I think. You know, could be wrong, but I kind of doubt it. Other questions or comments? Is there a non-apostate Islam? I don't know how to answer that question. I don't know enough about Islam to tell you that. But I'll tell you what, I have heard some imams speak as if they were Nazarenes. You know? There was one that I've heard a whole hour message where he was talking about, you know, and I think he put himself in line for being a beheading, because he was talking about we need to come together with the people of the book. All of the people of the book need to come together, and not under one head, but you know, as you know, under one head, as in. I think he was talking about literally the Messiah. He was certainly speaking like an evangelical, you know. So anyway, there are certain people who are like that. And I liken that kind of to C.S. Lewis's book The Last Battle, where there was a Muslim type, you know, there were the bad guys, in the Narnia was the good guys. And these people were from the East, and they were very mind put very much in mind of Islam, okay? And their god's name was Tash, okay? And here was this guy, one warrior, who was a devout Tash worshipper, who was actually worshiping Aslan. And calling him Tash, and it was because he believed that that Tash was Yehovah, not Allah. You know what I mean? So, everything that he was worshiping was Messiah, and you know, and everything that he was striving for was Messiah. But it was done in the name of this other god, who is made to be all good. In their religious speak, but not so much in their religious practice, you know. So anyway, he was calling him by a different name, kind of different from what Israel did, where they were worshiping other gods and calling them by the name of the Creator. Very different. So, anyway, that's one of the deepest children's novels I've ever read, is The Last Battle by C.S. Lewis. So, anyway, I hope that made some sense. I don't know. Maybe I got off on too much of a tangent. What do you think about the Sanhedrin suing the Pope, which was in the news this week? I'd never heard of that. They summoned the Pope and will try him in absentia if he does not show up on September 20th, 2015. They're going to try him in absentia more than likely then. He's not going to bother them. I didn't hear that until just now. Questions or comments? Anybody like to take the mic? Raise your hand. I'll be happy to give it to you. If not, we shall move to Hebrews chapter 10. That's our read out of shot portion for today. Let me wet my whistle. Got some warm yerba mate tea here. Barely body temperature. Not a little bit below body temperature, come to think of it. A little cool. Anyway, Hebrews chapter 10, verses 1 to 10. Now, wait a minute. Before I go on, let me read the first sentence out of my commentary so that you'll get it. Remember that Hebrews was written to a group of believing Hebrew priests. Acts chapter 6 and verse 7 talks about priests, not a few, who trusted Messiah, who were thinking of going back to the sacrificial system. Okay? That's the reason that the author of Hebrews so vehemently so strictly defines the difference between the Melchizedek high priest and the Levitical high priest. Okay, the Aharonic high priest. Okay? He sets them apart from chapter 4 until chapter 9. There's a big difference between these things and their ministries. Okay? So, now, they were thinking about going back to the sacrificial system, and in chapter 10 is the culmination of Rav Shaul's argument that they should stay the course. Okay? That the whole idea is just stick with us here, man. Do not go back to that sacrificial system. Okay? Now, here's what it says in chapter 10, verses 1 through 10. For the law, having a shadow of good things to come, that is the law of the Levitical priesthood. Okay, that law that was added to the covenant. Galatians chapter 3 and verse 19. Okay, that law that was added to the covenant was the Levitical laws pertaining to the priests. Okay. For the law, having a shadow of things to come, and not the very image of the things, can never, with those sacrifices which they offered year by year, continually make the comers thereunto perfect or complete. For then would they not have ceased to be offered? Because that the worshippers, once purged, should have had no more conscience of sins. But in those a remembrance again of sins every year in those offerings. Okay, for it's not possible that the blood of bulls and of goats should take away sins. Therefore, when he cometh into the world, he saith, sacrifice and offering thou shouldest not, but a body hast thou prepared me. In burnt offerings and for sin thou hast had no pleasures. Burnt offerings and offerings for sin you shall have no pleasure. Then said I, lo, I come, in the volume of the book it is written of me, to do thy will, O Elohim. Above, when he said, sacrifice and offering and burnt offerings, and for sin thou wouldest not, neither hadst pleasure, which are offered by the law. Then said he, lo, I come to do thy will, O Elohim. He taketh away the first, that he may establish the second. By the which will we are sanctified through the offering of the body of Mashiach Yeshua once. Let me do that again. Verse 10. Very important. By the which will we are sanctified through the offering of the body of Yeshua HaMashiach once. Not more than once. Once. Okay. I'm going to comment on verses 1 to 10. Remember that Hebrews was written to a group of believing Hebrew priests in Acts chapter 6 and verse 7 who were thinking about going back to the sacrificial system. And that verse chapter 10 is the culmination of Rav Shaul's, or his Talmud's, I'm not sure which, argument that they should stay the course. It was definitely either Rav Shaul or somebody that he influenced greatly. I think it's one of his Talmudim or himself. Torah gives us promises in the form of parables. Those promises are efficacious to us if people who believe the promises of Yehovah faithfully perform them. Faithfully completing all the steps without the belief in Yehovah's promise to provide the reconciliation that is the object renders the action useless. It's wasted effort. Faith to believe the promises of Yehovah without the accompanying obedience is actually useless, or equally useless, as Yehovah's brother Yaakov points out in the second chapter of his book, in verses 12 through 18, where it is written, so speak ye, and so do, as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. For he shall have judgment without mercy, that hath showed no mercy, and mercy rejoiceth against judgment. What profit, my brethren, though a man say he hath faith, and have not works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and any one of you say unto them, Depart in peace, be warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful for the body, what profit? Even so, faith, if it hath not works, is dead, being alone. Yea, a man may say, Thou hast faith, and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. Our merciful actions that are based on our belief that Yehovah will fulfill all his promises are the object of Yaakov's letter, because the faithful actions taken by are the object of faith. And the action of offering is the object of our faith in Yehovah's promises. Faith in the subject of Yehovah's promise, without the accompanying object of obedience, is wasted as objective reality. There is no physical evidence of that belief, and those who hear of our faith, but see no evidence of our walk, can properly call us liars. Let me read that again. There is no physical evidence of that belief, and those who hear of our faith but see no evidence in our walk can properly call us liars. 1 Yochanan chapter 2, verses 3 through 6. And hereby we do know that we know him, if we keep his commandments. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoso keepeth his word, in him verily is the love of Elohim perfected. Hereby know we that we are in him. He that saith he abideth in him ought himself also so to walk, even as he walked, speaking of Yeshua HaMashiach. If we go through the motions of all the sacrifices without flaw, but do not believe they will take away our sins, we've done nothing but kill a perfectly good animal. If we believe that the sacrifice will take away the sins, but don't do the offering, then the sin is still there. Faith is the victory, according to 1 Yochanan chapter 5 and verse 4. But biblical faith is not merely the mental understanding that we are justified without works of Torah. Biblical faith is evidenced in our manner of life, as was shown us in the Melchizedek offering, a sin offering, even though he is Mashiach Yeshua, Yehovah in the flesh. We walk in accordance with the commandments of Yehovah, and that walk becomes more and more natural as we become like Adonenu, our Master, Moshienu, our Messiah, Yeshua. Verse 1 speaks of the law as a shadow of things to come. The law that Paul, or his Talmid, who wrote the book, is speaking about in context of chapter 7 through 9, is the sacrificial laws that guided the Kohanim in their temple service. The shadow could not perfect those who relied on it, only on it, to take away sins, as we said before. If it could, then the atonement would only have had to be offered once. The fact that it needed to be continually repeated showed its inability to make us complete before Avinu. The use of the nouns and pronouns in verses 1 and 2 makes it clear to me. If the law, having a shadow of good things to come and not the very image of the things, can never with those sacrifices which they, that is the priests of chapter 7 through 9, offered year by year, continually make the comers thereunto perfect, for then would they, that is the sacrifices, not have ceased to be offered? Because that the worshippers, that is the comers thereunto, once purged, should have had no more conscience for sins. The reference in verse 4 to the blood of bulls and goats ties us through Ezekiel 45 to Numbers 28, 11 through 29, I'm sorry, Numbers 28, 11 through 29, 40. And the offering of 70 bulls for the nations and the goats of sin offerings in every Musaf offering except the Shabbat and for atonement on Yom Kippur. He refers to, in Psalm 40, 6 through 8, sacrifice and offering thou didst not desire. Mine ears hast thou opened, burnt offering and sin offering hast thou not required. Then said I, Lo, I come in the volume of the scroll that is written of me. I delight to do thy will, O Elohai, my Elohim, yea, thy law within my heart. Moshiach says that Yehovah did not desire animal sacrifices, but obedience to his will, meaning Torah, his instructions. Because he could not offer even one man whose singular desire, because he did not find even one man whose singular desire was to do his will without question, not one man who could overcome his Yetzer Hara, his evil inclination, not Adam, not Abraham, not even Moshe, the meekest man ever to walk on the earth, no one, Yehovah had to institute a series of offerings, parables, shadow pictures, to make atonement for men's sins. Eventually, Yehovah had to provide a spotless lamb of atonement for himself, Genesis 22, a second Adam, miraculously conceived without the input of man's seed. And to ensure his obedience, he had to quicken that seed of the woman by his own indwelling Ruach. How else could he be certain of the seed's willing obedience? This was and is Moshiach Yeshua. In Galatians chapter 4, verses 3 through 5. Even so we, when we were children, were in bondage under the elements of the world. But when the fullness of time was come, Eloha sent forth his son, made of a woman, made under the law, to redeem them that were under the law, that we might receive the adoption of sons. The law here refers to rabbinic traditions, not Torah. Then in Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15, for we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. In all points equals lawful, that is Torah, and legal, man-made tradition and regulation. Okay, in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. Then in Galatians chapter 5, verses 16 through 18. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusteth against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary the one to the other, so that ye cannot do the things that you would. But if ye be led of the Spirit, ye are not under the law. Galatians 5, 16 through 18. Spirit equals Torah, flesh, the law, equals man-made tradition. Same as in Romans chapter 7 and verse 14 and following. Yehovah's will is that we walk after the Ruach and obey his Torah. By the one-time offering of Yeshua on the tree, he did away with the need for atonement. You will notice that the word atonement is not found in Ezekiel, though the root word kafar, to cover, is translated reconciliation in 45:15, 17, and 20, all having to do with the whole nation or the house of Israel. Salvation was national, not individual, in Tanakh. It is no different now. All Israel shall be saved. And they are not all Israel who are of Israel. Okay? Notice the difference if you're looking at the notes of Yisrael with a Y, that being the redeemed, and Israel without the Y, being physical seed of Abraham who do not trust Yehovah. Okay, and I'm open to questions and comments on verses 1 to 10. Any questions or comments? Hello, born of God. Welcome to FT, Fulfilling Torah, and Shabbat Shalom to you. Pale, or Paye, I don't know which way you pronounce that. You too, welcome to the room. And I saw somebody else in here. Saved in the name of Jesus. We spoke to you already. I guess that's all that's new for right now. Welcome and Shabbat Shalom. Are there questions or comments on the Torah, the Haftarah, the Psalm, or Hebrews chapter 10, verses 1 to 10? And Shabbat Shalom, Sergeant First Class Joe. Sergeant First Class, that's E7. You know, that's appointment by Congress. Okay? That's one, when you reach E7, it takes a lot to get you to busted to anything below that. You gotta actually go to Congress for the bust. Skipper can't do that at a non-judicial punishment. Any questions or comments? Any questions or comments? No hands? Okay. Moving on. I'm not sure. I think we're going to go through the rest of the book from here. Yes, we are. So I'll read 11 through the end of the chapter, and then we'll move on from there. And every priest standeth daily ministering and offering oftentimes the same sacrifices which can never take away sins. But this man, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down on the right hand of Jehovah, from henceforth expecting till his enemies be made his footstool. For by one offering he hath perfected forever them that are sanctified. The Holy Spirit also is a witness to us, for after that he had said before, this the covenant that I will make with them after those days, saith Jehovah, I will put my laws into their hearts, and in their minds will I write them, and their sins and iniquities will I remember no more. Now, where remission of these is, no more offering for sin. Having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter into the holiest by the blood of Yeshua, by a new and living way, which he hath consecrated for us, through the veil, that is to say, his flesh, and an high priest over the house of Elohim, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the profession of faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. Remember, this is being addressed to priests who believed, Acts chapter 6 and verse 7. And as we could see if we read chapters 7 through 9 of Hebrews. Okay. Let me go back here. Let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised. And let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together as the manner of some, but exhorting, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. For if we sin willfully after we have received knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sins. There is no more sacrifice for sins. He already said that earlier. Okay? So if you sin willfully, that is the priesthood, goes ahead and does the atonement, because we'll see that again in a couple of verses, then there is no more sacrifice. There is no more sacrifice for sins. What are you doing? There is no... Anyway, but a certain fearful looking for of judgment and fire indignation which shall devour the adversaries. He that despised Moshe's law died without mercy under two or three witnesses. Of how much sorer punishment, suppose ye, shall he be thought worthy who hath trodden under foot the Son of Elohim and hath counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing and hath done despite unto the Spirit of grace. For we know him that hath said, vengeance unto me I will recompense, saith Jehovah. And again, Jehovah shall judge his people. A fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living Elohim. But call to remembrance that's the end of our passage right there, 31. And so I'll comment from there. I'm about to enter into an educated guess. I'll tell you about that when I get there. Okay. Yeshua's offering was performed once, and there is no longer a need or a use for sacrifices for atonement. We have been reconciled to Avinu by Yeshua's one-time offering. So every atonement that took place after Yeshua's death was simply the death of an animal, for no purpose. Yehovah gave the Jews, that is, the political leadership of the religion of Israel, about 40 years to get their acts together. When they didn't, here came Rome to destroy the temple, so the Jews, that is the political leaders, could not offer an atonement. I am going to venture an educated guess right here. The reason that Yehovah has not allowed the new temple construction in Jerusalem is his gracious long-suffering with Yehuda. No sooner will the new temple be built than Yehovah's wrath will begin to fill the bowls. And it won't take long to fill them to overflowing. At least a part of the ministry of the 144,000 will be to give the Jews, that is the political leadership of the religion, a chance to make teshuvah by giving them loud and continuous warning of Yehovah's judgment to come. That's the end of my educated guess. I think that's the way it's going to be. I think that's what the 144,000 are going to be for. In verse 10, that'll be their main deal, because he wants all Israel to be saved. Okay. In verse 10, we see once. In verse 12, we see one sacrifice. In verse 14, we see one offering. The Levitical Aharonic priesthood had to be done in the temple every day, offering the tamid, the daily sacrifices. They had to offer all the musaf offerings we saw in our Torah portion today, every Shabbat, every new moon, every Mo'ad. In the third temple, as we said earlier, only Pesach and Sukkot will see Musaf offerings. The one offering to atone will never be offered again, even as a shadow or a parable. Those animal sacrifices were never Yehovah's perfect will. His perfect will was that Adam eat of the tree of life, obedience to his Torah. There was only one instruction. Yeshua did Yehovah's perfect will, who through the faith of Yeshua reckoned his righteousness to us, whom he would sanctify, and to those who would follow him, desiring Yehovah's heart to be his own. In verses 16 through 18, Shaul makes reference to the new covenant, of which we are partakers, though Yeshua finished through Yeshua's finished work on the tree. The word remission in verse 18 is defined in verse 17. Their sins and iniquities I will remember no more. The definition of remission is the cancellation of a debt, a charge, or guilt. Yehovah remits our debt and guilt when we trust Yeshua to deliver us. And once a debt is remitted and Yehovah chooses to forget it, it no longer exists. If he ever forgets us, we will cease to exist. He is constantly remembering us, constantly speaking us into continued existence by the same word he used to call us into existence in the first place. Since our sins are forgotten and no longer exist, we can walk right into his throne room and make our supplications to him personally. We enter by a new, compared to the old way of animal blood, the way of death. We enter by a new and living way, by the blood of Mashiach Yeshua, who ever liveth and in whom we live. Verse 22 has a clear reference to Ezekiel 36:25 and Numbers 19. Here's what it says in Ezekiel chapter 36 and verses 24 through 27. For I will take you from among the heathen and gather you out of all countries and will bring you into your own land. Verse 25. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you and ye shall be clean. From all your filthiness and from all your idols will I cleanse you. Verse 26 and 27. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. And I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and will give you an heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you, and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them. Clean water refers to the water of reconciliation, the red heifer in Numbers 19. It is pretty obvious, even to the most casual observer, that we haven't seen the fullness of this prophecy yet. We are not all in the land, so we must be awaiting the prophecy's ultimate fulfillment. But we do partake of it today. His Spirit is in us. He has softened our hearts toward His Torah obedience. In verses 23 to 31, Paul makes his appeal, and he is about to reach the summit of his argument. These believing Hebrew priests are ready to abandon the Netzari sect and go back to the traditions of the Pharisees. Our faith is in the blood of Yeshua, not of bulls and goats. Our faith is the faith of Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, the covenant, not the law that was added, the laws of animal sacrifice for atonement. Wherefore then serveth the law, Galatians 3:19? It was added because of transgressions, till the seed should come to whom the promise was made, and it was ordained by angels in the hand of a mediator. Yehovah, who promised us an inheritance in the entire land grant of Genesis 15, is faithful to perform what He has promised. So let's not forsake assembling ourselves, in verse 25, for Torah reading and discussion on our Shabbats, our Moedim. Shaul then tells them, that taking part in the temple atonement is willful sin, and there is no way back after you've denied the Master who bought us. Get that? There is no remission of sin when you sin willfully against the atonement of Yeshua. That's what this whole book is coming to. We are at the epitome of what this book is for. Everything that came before is building up to this, and everything that comes after illustrates it. Okay, here we go back to Shaul then tells them that taking part in the temple atonement is willful sin, and there is no way back after you've denied the Master who bought us. These priests were going to go back and offer animal sacrifices for their sins under the temple priesthood and authority. Paul tells them that there is no more sacrifice for atonement. Those sacrifices have no more effect. If Josephus is right, there has been no evidence of Yehovah's acceptance of the Kippurim since Yeshua's death on the tree. And there had been, as there had been for 1400 years before, without fail. Trusting to those offerings that no longer had any effect was tantamount to rejection of Mashiach's blood and despite and contempt of the Ruach of Yehovah. Trampling Yeshua's blood and thinking his sacrifice common is the same thing to Shaul. Yehovah is who will judge those men, and that should cause abject terror in them. Next, he reminds them of the suffering and reproach they gladly suffered when they first believed, how they both suffered hardship themselves and supported those who had done so. Now they'd come to Paul's own support when he was shut up, I infer, in Felix and Agrippa's prisons in Acts chapter 24 and 25. He tells them to not cast away their confidence in Mashiach, to not compromise what they know to be true, just so that they can have peace with unbelievers. There should be no cause of war between believers, but Yeshua came to cause division between believers and pagans. So keep your patience, because He who has promised is faithful and will fulfill the covenant. That's the last of my commentary for today, and I'm open to questions and comments on any of the Torah, Haftarah, Psalm, or Brit Hadashah. And if you have a question or a comment and would like the mic, raise your hand. Truth and Ken, you may have the mic.
Just a quick question for you, Mark. When you read Ezekiel 45, 9 through 25, I believe. You said there would not be certain feasts in the coming millennium, according to this chapter. So I gather you're using this chapter as a foreshadowing, are you not, of what's to come? Can you please clarify? And if so, if this is a picture of what is to come, maybe you can clarify the fact that we're seeing sin offerings here. Go ahead, I yield the mic.
Yes, I made it a point to tell you that the Melchizedek high priest is going to have to transgress lower commandments in order to fulfill the higher commandments, and therefore he's going to be offering sin offerings for himself. Okay? He's going to be offering sin offerings. This is the Melchizedek high priest, Yeshua HaMashiach. He's going to have to break command. He's got to fulfill all righteousness, okay? Because there are going to be people who are not going to be bringing up their offerings to the temple. Okay? He needs to be the guy that shows them the right way. Oh, he is without sin, okay? But he is going to have to transgress more minor commandments in order to fulfill more major commandments. And therefore, that's what the sin offering is for. It has nothing to do with atonement. It has to do with covering that thing that you had to transgress for whatever purpose, for whatever reason. It wasn't a matter of transgressing it willfully. It was a matter of transgressing it because you had to. And that's what the high priest made his offerings for. He had to offer sin offering before he started offering anything else. Every day. Okay? That's what the high priest does. The high priest was supposed to be perfect without any blemish whatsoever. Okay? Yeah, it was for his sin. It was for his sin of transgressing the minor commandment in order to fulfill the major commandment. Other questions or comments? That's the way I see it. I'm just a guy. I could be wrong, but that's the way I see it. Well, they're not. I don't think they're going to make the announcement on the Shabbat. So it could be that they'll be making the announcement in the next few minutes because the Shabbat is just about to end in Israel. It's almost sundown there. Where did I get what, Billy Can? Whatever it is from a simple reading of the scripture. Probably. Patty, you got your hand up. You may take the mic. About Melchizedek. What about him? Oh, that he... the. Yeshua is the Melchizedek high priest. He's the prince that will be in the third temple. Okay, so you take all of that together and you put those together. You got the Melchizedek high priest offering the sin offerings in the temple. Patty, hands up, take the mic.
I guess I have the mic. Okay. This kind of brought up the question, and I had this yesterday on my mind. BEO knows this one. But I was in the great debate room and last night, and I happened to mention in that day. And of course, BEO knew exactly what I was referring to. And it was Zechariah 14. And Zechariah 14. And I read that whole chapter, I believe, I don't know how many times, where Yohebahe will actually come with his feet and stand upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave to the midst towards the east and towards the west. And it goes on to create this great valley, and the mountains shall be removed. It just is such an awesome chapter to really fully understand. But the thing that really caught my attention was, in every part in Jerusalem and Judah shall be holiness unto Yahweh of hosts, and all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them and see thereof, and in that day there shall be no more the Canaanites in the house of Yahweh of hosts. And the thing that caught my attention was the sacrifices. I'm just kind of baffled. I mean, I was just kind of like, okay, what does this mean? The sacrifices. And but it clearly tells you that he says in that day they will bring back the sacrifices. And I was kind of wondering, would we be killing animals, or what are the sacrifices? And I liked it in earlier when we were talking about, especially with Ken, that we present ourselves as a living sacrifice. But then I know too that in that day there will be people who had not walked in the ways of Yahweh or keep his Torah, and they shall be taught them, and they will have to come, is I believe, once a year to the Feast of Tabernacles to bring their sacrifice. I'm just kind of like, I'm trying to get this in my head, trying to understand all this. And and I've been beating on this thing in my mind for days and days and days, trying to get this in that day. I'll release the mic now. BEO will, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? We shared a little bit of like that last night or yesterday in the great debate room, and Bill G was bringing up some things, but I had to leave to go to service. The book disagrees. Yeah, that's my problem, is the book of Hebrews agreeing with Zechariah, because I keep going back to the book of Hebrews, and I go back to Zechariah 14:9, and it's just like, okay, I'm not getting it. I'm honestly not getting it. There's got to be some kind of answer there. So I'm going to release the mic now. Your mic.
I'm back. Sorry if I left you dead air. Didn't mean to. Are there other questions or comments?
where I got it from, Billy. I'm just looking at your last comment there, Billy Ken. I got it from taking Ezekiel chapter 40 through 48, talking about the millennial temple. In Hebrews chapter 4 through 10, that talks about the difference between the Aaronic priesthood and the Melchizedek priesthood, and brings it all around to that last five or six verses that we talked about, verses 26 through 31. And how there's no sacrifice for atonement anymore. Okay? None. That was fulfilled in Yeshua on the tree. Okay? There is no more sacrifice for atonement. But there will be in the temple, in Ezekiel chapter 40 through 48, in that temple that has not been built yet, there will be offerings for sin. Sin offerings. Sin offerings are specifically for the priest and for the people who have to break a minor commandment in order to keep a more major commandment. In other words, trying to save a life or something like that, no matter what the life is, whether it's human or animal, to save a life in order, you know, and to do that you had to break some minor commandment. Walk through a cemetery and over a grave. Okay, that's a minor commandment. There has to be an offering for that trespass. Okay? Trespass offering. Okay? Sin offering. It's not a matter of an atonement. Okay? And the high priest, the Melchizedek high priest, the prince, will be offering those. That's what it says in Ezekiel chapter 40 to 48. Okay? That means Yeshua will be offering sin offerings because of things that he is going to have to do in order to do the more important things. Okay? That's what sin offerings are for. That's according to the covenant, Ezekiel chapters 20 through 29. Or rather, 30. Okay. Anybody else got a question or a comment? Talking about those last verses of Hebrews, chapters of Hebrews, always brings, because of the way the King James is worded, and, you know, sacrifices for sins, they're offerings for sin, not sacrifices. Okay? There's only one atoning sacrifice. Okay? It was pictured up until the time of Yeshua. What's going to happen in that next temple is that they're going to offer a sacrifice for atonement. And that's what's going to bring judgment down on Israel. I personally think, and I could be wrong, but I don't think so. Now, they offered 39 offerings for atonement. Atonement sacrifices. Okay? Sacrifices for atonement. To cover the sins of the people. After Yeshua had fulfilled it. And when they get the 40th one, remember, 40 is the number of probation. When they offer that 40th one, whether they only did 37 or 39, I don't know. But, you know, it was something like that because it's about that much time. Okay? And as soon as they offer that 40th one, that's when judgment is really going to come down on them. Because their probation will be over. Get it? That things are going to get really bad after they've offered one or two offerings atoning sacrifices. Big trouble. Big trouble coming. My own personal opinion, and again, I could be wrong, but that's how I make it all work in my mind. Other questions or comments? If there are no other questions or comments, No, I don't think it's thick. I think it's, Patty, I think what it is however many years of thinking after the seminarians is what is really hard. It's trying to get over that. And I'm still trying to get over it, too, so, you know. Okay, so anyway. And you know what? We're going to find out that we were all wrong, probably. when we actually talk to Yeshua, he's going to go, yeah, dummy, where did you get that from? Anyway, Truth and Ken, your hand is up. You can take the mic.
Just a quick note that I've always understood the early Hebrews to be speaking of a time in which Messiah is the Mashiach ben Yosef, or the suffering servant, okay? Where he becomes our high priest and does those things that the suffering servant, being the servant of Yah, in such duties, which is of the high priesthood, would be entrusted to, and that's something that our Messiah is doing. Meaning he did come in his first visitation, okay, his first visitation to this earth was as Mashiach ben Yosef, and thus now he is our high priest. Then I see Zechariah 14 showing us Mashiach ben David, which is his second coming, which is all about when he comes as a conquering king. So, you know, I'm not sure how we can't see these two differentiating events, these two differentiating roles of Mashiach. I know the rabbinic Jews for thousands of years have believed that, you know, there would be one coming, two Messiahs, but many of us see it as one Messiah, two comings. So, you know, keep in mind that the letter to the Hebrews was written for the Jews, beginning in those days when Messiah had come as Mashiach ben Yosef, and they did not understand why he came, and this was to clarify for all of us, particularly those Jews of that day who did not understand this, that this is why he first came and why he had to come and die to become our new high priest for that period of time. Okay? So that began on the so-called fifth day, or that millennium after he came in the flesh and died. Okay? That's what the letter to the Hebrews is all talking about. He came and he died, and thus he then became our high priest in the heavens. Right? But then he's going to come again. See? So there is yet more change. And that's what all these feast days are all about, to point out these visitations, these most awesome events of mankind, in which Yah and his son, Messiah, you know, make us one with them. I mean, that's what this is all about, and that's what we should kind of focus on, I guess. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out, that I still see there being two different periods here, periods of time. You know, the letters to the Hebrews is one period, Zechariah 14 is a following period. So, I know maybe not everybody sees it that way, but for consideration, I yield the mic.
Okay, I see Zechariah 14 as during the millennium, and that's, you know, at least that part where it says that, you know, they're going to go up to Jerusalem for the Feast of Sukkot, and if they don't, they're not going to get rain. That's all millennial, very certain. So I see Zechariah chapter 14 as a microcosm, and or a macrocosm maybe, I don't know. But Ezekiel is talking about what's going on in Jerusalem, in the temple, and Zechariah is talking about what's going to happen out in the world, I think, and it's all at the same time, my own personal opinion. And that's that. Sunfish, welcome to the room. I've seen you in here before, and welcome back. Haven't seen you in a while. Shabbat shalom to you, and your hand is up. You may take the mic.
Yeah, I got up early this morning, and I was looking for you, and I couldn't find you. And I ended up someplace else, and I fell asleep. So I had to woke up and come and find you. But anyways, you know, just an overview on the book of Hebrews. I mean, my personal opinion is there's like 7 references to the Olam Haba in there. The world to come. But, you know, here's the strange thing is, like you said, I don't think the King James gives the book of Hebrews a lot of justice. But also the Christian tradition basically doesn't either. It says basically that the book of Hebrews was written to keep Jews from going back into Judaism. And I don't think that's why that the book of Hebrews was written. But anyway, I'm going to pass the mic.
Thank you, Sunfish. Yeah, I don't think it's to keep Jews from going back to Judaism. I think it's to keep priests from going back to their actual work in the temple, especially for atonement. That's what I think this is that it's about. And you know, that's my own personal opinion, and I think it bears when you consider Ezekiel 40 through 48 and Hebrews 4 through 10 altogether. You know, try to make those two juxtapose. Again, my own personal opinion. Other questions or comments? Why do I have my hand raised? Okay. Are there other questions or comments? Anyone like to have the mic? Anyway. All right. Well, in that case, we're going to go ahead and call this Bible study done. I'll lay the blessing on you and hand the con over to Ripper. Okay. The blessing goes like this. Yevarechecha Yehovah. V'yishmurecha Yehovah panav elecha V'yichunecha Yisa Yehovah panav elecha V'yisem lecha Shalom. B'shem Yeshua Moshiach, Sa Shalom. May Yehovah bless you and keep you. May Yehovah make His face to smile upon you and be gracious unto you. May Yehovah lift up His countenance upon you and grant you His peace. In the name of Yeshua, our Messiah, the Prince of Peace. Amen, the Amen. Shavua Tov to you all. We'll see you back here next week, Yehovah willing, and the creek don't rise, 10:30 in the morning, or as close to it as we can get. And Ripper, you have the con. Take it away.
Do I have the mic? I'm not showing the mic by my name. Thank you. Brother Mark, I believe the proper naval response to that would be, the con is mine, I chief. Not bad for an army grunt, huh? I don't see Brother Netzer in the room. We usually let him share an original song at about this time. In his absence, we're going to go ahead with our afternoon program. Or I have the con, I chief. I would say sir, but I know you worked for a living as an NCO. So we're going to start out with Devorah Clark with Psalm 115, a video. We're going to share a video of Pastor Daniel Fusco, whose Wednesday night services a couple of months ago have closely followed our Torah portion. Get that Christian perspective from somebody who is a wannabe Torah scholar. And then we're going to have Mark's weekly radio program from Hebrew Nation Radio, the Torah Teachers Roundtable, and we're going to be covering Revelations 14. So we're going to move on with our psalm and then our afternoon program. God bless you all for participating today.